You listen to KBZU, news, traffic, weather, traffic, news.
Escort, mission.
Chicken noise.
99.995599.
Mattress and lanes, slow and go on the 805.
Man, I heard that chicken noise really well in my head. I'm glad you
said that. Oh, hey-o!
Shotgun blast.
Random.org.
Are we doing this?
I guess. Let's do it.
Roll for host.
15.
10.
It's gray.
It's gray. White.
Gray is not a number.
Is that higher than 15? Bar. Or?
It's very enigmatic.
Dude, multitasking.
Refresh.
Six.
All right, I think that means I won.
Sweet. It's you.
All right. Hello, everybody out there. Welcome to the Escort Mission Podcast. We're here, as always, with me, Mike, and we also got Josh. How's it going, Josh?
What's up, dude?
And we got we got Gnarly, brother, man, and we got Chaz, too. How's it going, Chaz?
It's going well. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing all right. It's been, yet again, I think, 2 weeks since we had a podcast, mm-hmm. So... Yep. If this goes, 6 or 7 hours, that's why.
We've been bi-weekly of late.
Yeah. So I'm guessing you guys have stuff you want to talk about.
Man, a lot of bullshit happens in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Josh's leg is moving a lot. I think that means he has stuff to say. So Josh, start us off.
I also drink a lot of coffee in the last few days.
All right. Why did you drink so much coffee, Josh?
I took a test and I passed, and that was Woo-hoo. Cool.
Finally passed his GED. Good job.
I just heard a story about the GED on NPR about how it...
You mean only, when you passed it?
The average person only studies for about 30 hours for the GED, mm-hmm. and the average high school student spends something over 1,000 or whatever hours... getting Whoa. A diploma, and they were trying to determine if GED folks were as successful in life as folks with high school diplomas. And? You know.
Don't leave us hanging. No, they're not? Okay. Right.
No.
Now, what that does say, though, is that if you were really thinking about it, and you were smart enough to think this through and actually a high-achieving student, you might have some benefit to just taking the GED very early and getting into the job market.
Right. Quickly. If we all thought like programmers or something, and we were in eighth grade, and we were like, I could just
take
a test like
next
week
30 hours
instead of going to high school
for
4 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems more efficient. Yeah. Do it.
I could just write a script for high school instead of actually taking high school. Yeah.
The thing is, you develop a lot of what some people call
soft skills.
Non-cognitive skills.
Yeah, soft skills, yeah.
But non-cognitive is a bad word. So somebody wrote a book and they were interviewing him and he called them character and stuff like that. Then we were talking about how like all those things are actually super important and now they have all these programs and classes just to teach those things. And they've proven that those kids in those classes where they're just teaching shit like character are actually phenomenally successful. Like they bring their college graduation rates up to like 70% compared to like 4% or something insane. Sounds
There's
awesome.
A really famous study in the 60s, started in the 60s, that gave rise to the whole Head Start program, which has a very similar conclusion about preschool. And they did it in a group of it's like Chicago or Philadelphia or one of those kind of Midwestern and East Coast cities. Same group of disadvantaged kids from one project provided free childcare, quality like 0 to 3 kind of childcare, or actually probably like 2 to 5 or something like that. They said that it was those same sets of skills, the soft skills, interpersonal relationships, and those sorts of things that are developed, not necessarily learning your ABCs in the class, but learning those other things that...
Totally. Yeah. I didn't mean to bring that up.
So valuable.
But it's interesting.
I did mean to make that joke, though.
Let's see. Games first, I guess, real fast. Game news. Borderlands 2 came out.
It did. It's out.
I'm not excited about that game at all, and so I didn't play it.
Did you hear how Gabe from Penny Arcade is like, he's not super crazy about it.
Really? He's like negative. I thought everybody loved it.
No, he was actually negative about it.
Yeah. But whenever I see the dubstep commercials for it,
yes,
or trailers, Jesus Christ,
90% more Wub.
Oh man, I love Wub. I want to play this. Wait,
dude,
no, I don't.
Heavy drops.
No. The Borderlands 2 Wub does not compare to the Cage the Elephant Borderlands 1 song. That song was perfect for that game.
I don't remember
that. Got me the
Ain't No Rest for the Wicked.
Ain't No Rest for the Wicked.
Oh, that was good.
Yeah,
that was good. But it's no dub Wub.
Eh, whatever.
I've been seeing a lot of those in Hulu. Like, they keep playing them for me. They know their market.
Just for you, yeah.
Unfortunately, I've seen about 90% of my Hulu commercials for the last week have been Republicans saying fuck you to Scott Peters. Like, apparently, they really don't want me to elect Scott Peters to, like, San Diego mayor. I have not researched this at all yet.
No, it's Bob Filner. Filner and Carl DeMaio are the mayoral
candidates.
Okay,
who is it? Like, councilman? What the hell
must
is Scott
be
Peters
else,
running
yeah.
for?
I don't know.
Man, Republicans hate that guy.
That guy's a dick. Huge. Huge dick.
I don't know.
That's
I don't know
Peter.
Who that is.
I try to never use advertising to judge any decision on it at all. I try to just read the booklets or whatever. Anyway. Warface. You guys probably don't know shit about
this. No. You told us about that last time, and we thought that was
okay.
A great name.
It's a great name, right? Yeah.
That's the pull two words out of a hat and mush them together game.
This is the game that in screenshots or video clips, it looks a lot like a Modern Warfare or COD Blops or whatever. It looks like a really, really good Modern Military.
I love COD Blops.
That's my favorite acronym.
Call
ever.
Of Duty Black Ops.
Carl those. Winslow, COD Blops.
It looks a lot like those, which is saying a lot. It looks like a very, very good Modern Military shooter, except it's free to play, and it's going to come out maybe the end of the
Warface.
Year or something like that. Beta starts the end of the year, maybe.
Battle Kill.
and it's published by It's developed by Crytek, you know, Crysis and such.
Yeah.
And getting published by Tryon, who did Rift and then some other MMO architecture.
That's a good pedigree.
Backman stuff. Anyway, I got even more excited from some info that came out, more info about Warface that just came out. It's going to have like a significant 5-player co-op campaign thing or missions, repeatable missions. Hmm. In addition to just the PvP, it's not going to be a PvP only like Modern Warfare, you know, shoot, die, fest.
That'll never fly. No one will ever play a game like that.
It's going to have the 5-player co-op, like, dungeon-style, except shooter scenario thing that I'm really excited about with increasing difficulty levels. And it's going to have Mass Effect 3-style unlocks for mostly cosmetic gear, or not mostly cosmetic, for partially cosmetic, but also functional, like, gun upgrades and stuff, and unlocking new guns that are really not more overpowered, just different options. A lot like Mass Effect 3, which would keep hardcore people playing for a really, really long time because it's totally random what you unlock. So if you really want some specific guns, you have to just play for a really long time and then play with the ones that you got or whatever. So it's not really pay to win, but you can like pay a few dollars for some more random unlocks, just like Mass Effect 3.
Mm-hmm.
So that sounds super awesome because... Even though theoretically that wasn't my favorite model in Mass Effect 3, like it did keep me hooked for a while. It's super fun.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking forward to that. But mostly what I played the last couple weeks was just Guild Wars 2, which is still very good, and played some more Dark Souls because.
Prepare to Die Edition.
I'm trying to get to the new content that came out with the PC edition, but I literally have not played any of it yet. But that's not a bad thing at all, apparently. I'm still having a super fun time just replaying it.
Sweet.
Just on PC, just replay it.
You're playing the same class, different class?
The class doesn't really matter. It's just kind of how you spec as you play. And I am trying to play like different weapons and stats a little bit. I'm falling into some of the same patterns that I did in the first just because I felt like that was a really smart decision or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I'm not making some of the dumb decisions I made and just doing everything a little faster, easier, and better. It is like totally the perfect difficulty curve now on my second playthrough, now that I know where most stuff is. Like it was little bit of an extra hard difficulty curve through your first time through, but I still loved it. Mm-hmm. But now it's just super fun because I can fly through some stuff, but I still forgotten enough, even though it was only like 6 months ago when I played it. That game is so good. Can't wait to get to the new shit. I did get to one new section, but it was actually in the original. I just missed it.
Oh, nice.
Hmm. At least one section. I missed a few things, and I'm just like finding some shit that I missed. Because when I was a noob at the game, you know, all the first few areas, I didn't know what I was doing as much. And now I'm a fucking pro at the game, so now all the first few areas, like, I can find all the secret shit a lot more easier or whatever.
Cool.
It's great, man. It's so much better when you know... Like, I literally skipped these bonfire checkpoints. I don't know if you know how critical these bonfire checkpoints are. It's like playing Ninja Gaiden NES or whatever, and having to play through worlds like 3-1, 3-2, and 3-3 without dying, instead of, like, getting the checkpoint of world 3-2.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, I didn't find the world 3-2 checkpoint, because it's kind of hidden. Sometimes it's literally behind an invisible wall.
You skipped them the last time you played, the first time you
played.
Yeah,
so I had to play all the way through, like, huge areas, all the way through to a boss, like, successfully without dying, which was super hard. But now I, like, found these checkpoints. I'm like, fuck, this is cake. Man, that game is good. I recommend it so much. I'm probably going to replay it, you know, multiple times for the rest of my life, because it's so good. I think it's definitely my best favorite game ever. But nice. Guild Wars 2 is still good.
also okay. Play that.
Bunch of non-game news. Tetris. I want to bring up a handful of non-game news bullshit. So You Think You Could Dance ended. Man,
I don't, actually.
It's a good show. I don't have to talk about that. How about this craziness with the making fun of Muhammad YouTube video?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I don't know what to say about this. And then the, was it Charlie Hebdo, French magazine, printed some more cartoons following up on the terrorist outrage internationally, following up the YouTube thing, right? They published some more cartoons saying, you know, just making fun of Muhammad or whatever.
Yeah.
Peace be upon him.
Islam, a religion of peace that I have no problem with whatsoever. Giant bomb sucks, but Islam is A-OK.
Yeah, maybe we don't want to talk about this. I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't have brought it up.
No, we definitely can. And you need to bring up the onion.
The onions was awesome.
And the beautiful illustration that they made.
There was a lot of great follow-ups. I mean, it's just insane. I cannot believe that, like...
Those people are insane. The religion, we're not saying Islam is crazy, murderous, pirate people, but we're saying those people that rioted are insane, right? Like, that kind of response feels incredibly inappropriate.
Yes.
And immature and irresponsible and...
Responding to words of any kind with violence of any kind is overreaching, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, are there...
Well, that's because you have no honor, Josh.
It's like the sticks and stones, right? Remember your bones, words, whatever. I don't know. I can't believe so many people are resorting to violence over this, though. It's not like one or two incidents.
Yeah.
Like, dozens of people have been killed at this point in many countries.
Yeah.
Many countries.
I mean, it's what comes of absolutist viewpoints of any kind.
And if they could just drink some alcohol and have some sex, maybe they wouldn't be, you know, torching cars and stuff. I'm serious, though. I mean, like, we all have this outlet where we can, like, say, you know, screw Jesus, and, you know, nobody's going to, like, attack us over that, and we can get it out, but they can't.
My favorite part is somebody, I forget who, made the comparison to...
Jesus is cool.
To, although the Onion article was funny, made the comparison to the Book of Mormon on Broadway right now.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Can you imagine the equivalent for Islam, like on Broadway right now? No, it would not happen.
Right?
Like, everyone would be afraid, and for good reason, because someone might get their life threatened over it. Right? We literally don't have free speech in America right now, to some extent, because you should feel afraid for your life if you say certain things.
Well, it's not that you don't have you do have the free speech, but you are just exercising it in a specific way because you know there might be consequences, which is kind of the point of free speech.
You can't exercise it in a vacuum. I mean, you have to be aware that there are outside forces that may not be happy with your free speech.
It is, I mean, it is really, it is, I don't know. I feel, on the one hand, yeah, it's totally ridiculous. Like, that, you know, that kind of behavior, it doesn't make sense. It is completely irrational. But it's kind of no more or less irrational than any of the other weird prescriptions in those books. To my mind, like, saying that, you know, no one should... I mean, obviously, there has been massive violence done in the name of many other religions, right? At the moment, Islam is the one that's causing the most direct violence in the world, but clearly Christianity has caused the Crusades, etc., right? So... It's just something endemic to, in my view, absolutist viewpoints. If you say, you know, my view of the world is inherently right, 100% right, and there can be no questioning of it, then why shouldn't you, you know, kill someone if the book that you believe in 100% to be the inerrant word of God, right, written down by men who are divinely inspired, says that you should? You should! You know, it's just ridiculous to believe that stuff
not to.
Without evidence. But yeah,
I am getting more and more like severely atheist every day because of shit like this. Like, also, no one, like, not a lot of people are talking about Romney being Mormon. It's like he somehow got it to disappear from the news or from the public discussion. Like, it's offensive to bring it up.
He's just Christian, you know,
right? Like, yeah. It's not racist or a bigoted to say, hey, Romney believes some things that I think are kind of crazy.
Yeah,
I don't really want to elect someone that believes some shit that I think is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's not bigoted or
but
racist.
But does Obama's Christianity not have any of the same feelings to you?
It has some of the same feelings,
uh-huh.
But they're less strong.
And I would submit that that's irrational.
I would say it's not irrational because, like a known like a convicted con man who lived less than 200 years ago, who we have all these like firsthand sources of evidence
accounts.
Of, mm-hmm. right, is pretty dramatically different from our tangible evidence. From 2,000 years ago, like standards for the press mm-hmm. and for record keeping and publishing, and you know, like people met Joseph Smith.
Yeah, no, I agree.
And wrote things like when he was alive,
yeah.
160 years ago or whatever.
Yeah,
and the you know the Gospels were written 50 years after Jesus died,
uh-huh.
and right
or 400.
But like 2,000 years ago, there were different standards for journalism and such.
Right, but it's just because somebody believed the weird shit longer doesn't make it less weird. It's still fucking weird. I mean, what's more weird? Somebody digging up golden plates in a forest or somebody turning water into wine?
It does make it less weird. Yeah, also because I grew up with it, it makes it less weird, which is arbitrary.
I think it makes it more familiar, but it's not less weird if you actually examine what's written.
Well, what's it? I mean, now we're arguing semantics. Like,
no, I think it's a valid. I'm saying it. I would say that. I mean, it doesn't mean you're still an atheist, and so am I. I would just say it's more weird, or it is. They're equally ridiculous sets of ideas, but for some reason, and I would say it's probably just familiarity. You're more okay with Obama saying that he's a Christian.
So I would say that some of these facts are equally, or not facts. So some of these beliefs
mm-hmm.
are equally ridiculous when viewed objectively.
Yeah.
Yes. But like Mormonism is more demonstrably false. Like there is more evidence to disprove it.
What?
Are we really going to have this discussion on the Escort Mission, a podcast about games and entertainment?
I just meant to bring it up
quickly.
No,
that's fine. But, interesting.
But I'm not sure we can have a discussion of whether Christianity or Mormonism is more weird.
We don't have to have the whole discussion. I mean, I could just say that and you could disagree and we can move on.
Yeah.
Okay.
But...
Because I'm kind of with Chaz over here. I think, they're both... they're both believing in supernatural shit that you can't prove, and yet you're more okay with one than the other.
But, like, things that happened 150 years ago, like, you can prove to a much greater extent than stuff that happened 2,000 years ago.
Like, but the concept of a supernatural being existing, like, how is that any more or less believable 150 years ago or a million years ago? It's the concept that there is a supernatural being this world that we have some kind of interaction
I'm
with.
I'm not arguing the concept of God at the moment.
Like, are you just saying people were dumber 2,000 years ago, so they were more likely to believe that whatever, the earth was flat or something? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying that we have, like, more recent first-hand evidence. Like, I forgot the technical terms.
So you're saying that,
like,
water could actually have been turned into wine, and we just don't have... We didn't have good reporting, and so it's more plausible that the stuff in the Bible happened.
No. Actually, a lot of Christians don't believe in most of the miracles and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, don't believe they happened.
Yes. Yeah, I know.
And right. So
Catholics are actually some of the most, like, relatively liberal and not restrictive Christians out there, which is kind of crazy.
Right. So I'm not really arguing any of those points, like, at all.
Okay. I would just, I mean, to me, it's all equally ridiculous and weird. And,
anyway.
Yeah.
The point I wanted to bring up is that,
think that Obama's a believing Christian. I don't think Clinton was either.
I think there's a good chance.
I think it's just like
any American politician that's Christian is, you know,
like, started going when they were 27 because they knew they wanted to run for president one day.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
But other people start when they're 27 legitimately, just because when they get older, they are more likely to go to church or whatever, you know? Yeah. And so I won't speak to what they honestly believe, our current or previous presidents, but I'd say there's a decent chance that they're feigning it because they have to get elected.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I always said that I thought we'd have a black president before a woman president, and we'd have a woman president before an atheist president.
By far. Man.
Do you think we'd have a gay president before an atheist president?
That is a good question.
Did we talk about that?
I don't know.
Did we talk about that statistic that atheists are about as trusted by the American people as rapists? Like, in a scientific study?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. There is a study in 2000...
Fair enough.
2004, I think. Right?
Well, what's to keep you from not just raping at will and
murdering?
Right.
If I don't have a moral code, then why don't I? I'm just going to murder you because no God is going to avenge me.
Right. They literally, like,
oh, God.
The majority of American Christians somehow, like, legitimately don't understand.
How could you possibly do good without someone telling you to do good?
Any moral code at all.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They're, like, literally, when asked, would you trust this person to be a child caretaker or something like that? The rankings go, like, real high for Christian, pretty high for whatever, Jewish or something, actually mediumly high for Muslim, pretty mediumly high for gay, right? Yeah. Super low, right next to rapists for atheists.
I could just see a couple, you know, like, interviewing a caretaker, and then they're like, oh, you know, he seems pretty cool. It's like, and then they say, oh, just, you know, by the way, I'm also an atheist. And then they, like, kind of huddle together and say, he's probably going to rape our child and throw him in a ditch. Can't do this.
I don't know.
What?
Come on. It seems really far away now. It just seems like it could never happen. But you never know when these things are, like, one generation away from everyone's opinion swinging.
As seems to be happening with gay marriage.
Exactly. Like, it literally seems like that totally happened in our generation.
Yeah.
Well, it happened before Idiocracy happens.
And that is actually something that makes me happy about the sort of Palestinian Israel-Palestine thing,
like, and maybe just one random generation will fix it.
I mean, you used to think that Northern Ireland was as intractable a problem, with as much violence and as you know, just religiously motivated, you know, all it seems like much the same type of situation, invading imperial force, you know, this was our land, this is our land, all that same kind of stuff, and that has been solved. Right, so
maybe someday we'll get actual Google Map data on North Korea.
Maybe
it's possible,
dude. North Korea is just an example of how secularism leads to, you know, violence and depravity. It's another Sodom, Mike.
Yeah, and they don't have Gangnam Style.
They do not.
Up there. So there, they fail.
Actually, they do. They friggin' love it. It blew up there. Somehow.
It blew up, but they don't have
somehow.
The Gangnam,
I don't know.
Like,
maybe the government decided to let it blow up there.
How do people even get it?
Exactly. Like, I think the government put it on TV.
Wow.
That's awesome.
I think they decided.
That's awesome.
Oh, I bet this they did
is,
it.
This is like...
an example of the decadent imperialism.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. This is to hate. Yeah.
Exactly.
This is, yeah, okay.
Right?
But nobody can't watch Psy and
but
not
to like it.
I know.
But to like it because it like skewers the elitists.
Yeah.
Right? Makes fun of their horse riding and
right,
stuff.
Right, right, right.
Yeah. So it's like, yeah.
Interesting.
Playable on multiple levels. Did I tell you I watched all of Newsroom? That show's fucking great.
Cool.
Fucking
you,
great.
You mentioned that you liked it.
Love it.
Cool. Do you like it more than his other series?
I don't know. It's all Aaron Sorkin.
Yeah.
When it came out, everyone was saying, yeah, it's Aaron Sorkin. I disagree. Yeah, it's fucking Aaron Sorkin. Anyway.
It is uncut, undiluted.
I watched Jiro Dreams of Sushi. Mm-hmm. Shit is good.
Yeah.
I highly recommend it.
Wait, what'd you say? What was it?
The one he talked about previously on Netflix, Jiro Dreams of
Sushi. Oh, yeah, the sushi one.
About the you know, the Subway sushi restaurant.
Right, the $5,000.
$400 a plate.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
And you're immediately going there to eat some?
Actually, I would really love to.
I totally would
love to. Yeah, everything he served me, I would eat.
If I was in Japan, I would pay. I would go for it. I would totally do it.
I'm not sure I would do it. I don't know.
I would do it.
I don't know. I don't think it's worth it.
It might be closer to $300. Does that sell you?
No, it doesn't.
No. It's 30,000 yen, whatever that is.
Yeah. If you say a three-digit number, I'm probably out.
I watch Hot Rod. Man, anything Andy Samberg does is... I'm sold.
Then how come you didn't see it when it first came out?
I don't know. It was on Netflix streaming now.
Yeah.
It's like 5 years old.
That's the criteria for me.
I found there are all these things from it that became memes or jokes that I heard and didn't know where they came from.
It's like what? Name one.
It's terrible. The guy, the Asian guy who like just thrusts his pelvis and throws flyers in the air.
Oh, yes.
Oh.
I know that one.
Right.
Yeah, that's from the movie.
There you go.
That's not just like a random dude on YouTube.
I think it would be just as funny either way, but...
Anyway. And Jay Farrow is now a leading cast member on Saturday Night Live. Saturday Night Live started a new season. I know you guys probably don't care and don't watch it. I think this is really significant. Because I think Jay Farrow is phenomenally talented. Phenomenally talented. I don't think he's exceptionally funny, at least at the moment, and at least in my opinion. But that's what I thought about Kristen Wiig like 6 years ago.
Mm.
6 years ago, I remember when Kristen Wiig was new on the show, and I was like, this chick is phenomenally talented, but I don't think she's funny. It took me like years of seeing her,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know if it's just me that changed and I got to know her better. Or whether she changed on the show and grew as a comedian, or both, right? But now I love her, and everybody loves her.
I think a lot of SNL has to do with the writers learning how to
write.
Yeah,
learning how to write better for it, right? But also they get better at the same thing
mm-hmm.
at playing whatever the writers write for them,
yeah.
instead of just doing whatever they're used to, whatever material they write, right? And also the audience gets better at knowing the characters that the person does and enjoying them no matter what they're doing, just because they're on the screen. Like, mm-hmm. I like Andy Samberg now, right? Somehow this sketch this weekend with Jay Farrow sitting next to Kenan Thompson, right? Somehow Kenan Thompson was funnier than Jay Farrow. I don't know how that happened. I couldn't believe it because I don't think Kenan Thompson is that funny, but I just know him better or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I can't wait for like 5 years from now when I love Jay Farrow as much as Kristen Wiig. Had to bring that up. That's it.
That's cool. I'm not a regular SNL watcher.
Yeah, I don't even know who Jay Farrow is.
Some stuff filters up via Reddit and
what is he known for? What's internet? Like one of his
He's
main...
known for doing Denzel Washington and doing Kanye West and doing Will Smith. He does like...
So he's an African-American gentleman.
He does some of those...
Otherwise, he's really talented.
Yeah. He does. He's like a really, really good impression guy.
Okay. Does he do Obama?
All he did for the first year was Kanye and Denzel and whoever I just said. And
Will Smith.
Will Smith. And maybe Samuel Jackson or something. Like,
and Morgan Freeman.
All he did for like a year or two is like, that's all the writers knew he could do, right?
Right.
Finally, he's doing original characters and stuff, and they finally gave him Obama last week on the season opener. And he did very, very good at Obama. Yeah.
Was it Jason Sudeikis or Fred Armisen who was doing it before
yes.
that? Armisen. Fred Armisen.
Right, yeah, okay. He was all right.
Yeah. All right.
Jay's is better.
Cool.
Cool.
Good job, Jay. Chaz, you look like you have words you might want to speak out loud.
I do.
All right, do it.
Before I do, people should go to our website.
Station ID.
TheEscortMission.com.
You listen to KBZ, news, traffic, weather, traffic,
escort,
news.
Escort, mission.
Chicken noise.
99.995599.
Mattress and lanes. Slow and go on the 805.
Man, I heard that chicken noise really well in my head. I'm glad you said that.
Oh, hey-o!
Shotgun blast.
Wow.
Yeah, go to our website, theescortmission.com. Send us mail so I can sing the mailbag theme.
Yeah, no mail this week. No mailbag theme for you.
If you're going to buy something, buy that on Amazon, and then click through our link and give us a piece of the action and review us on iTunes. Tell a friend. Definitely tell a friend. That's the number one way you can help the show.
Speaking of our Amazon cachet, mm-hmm. Is it large? Is it a largesse now, would you say?
It is largesse in that the people who are essentially giving it to us don't have to. So it is their largesse.
Like, is it enough to buy a mic? Can we?
Enough to buy a mic. I don't know if it's enough to buy like three lav mics, which is what we were thinking of doing.
We could just share one.
Yeah, we can all just lean into one person's lapel.
Yeah, okay. Sweet.
Yeah, it's getting there.
Send us more so we don't have to do that uncomfortable, awkward situation we just...
Yeah, we have ideas. We have ideas about live.
We don't want that to be the idea. Don't make that the idea, please.
Sorry, go ahead. Yes, do those things. This week, so I found a... I've been getting really hyped. I'm totally on the hype wagon for Cloud Atlas, which I've discussed the movie before. Yeah. I saw another thing probably 2 weeks ago at this point, which was multiple headshots. So the premise of this movie is that they have... They have actors playing multiple characters throughout the six interweaving storylines, which I did not know was happening. And
that's ambitious.
You sort of get it a little bit. You're like, when you watch the trailer, you're like, oh, there's Tom Hanks, and oh, there's Tom Hanks again, because he looks like Tom Hanks, you know, a couple times.
Tom Hanks is good at that.
I defy anyone.
A lot of times he doesn't look like
to
Tom
watch,
Hanks.
That's true.
To watch the 6 minute trailer and pick out Hugh Grant, because he's in there twice, and I had no idea.
Because he looks like Tom Hanks.
It's uncanny. Uncanny how much they made him look like Tom Hanks. They have actors playing different races, different genders, different ages. They're doing amazing stuff with that. And I saw a comparative shot of, like, the headshots of, you know, it's like Hugo Weaving is going to be in 5 out of the 6 storylines. He's playing a woman in one of them. He's like he's different races. He's Korean in one of them. It's totally mind blowing.
Are they doing this because of the book for some reason?
The book,
like, somehow the book stories are intertwined enough that these are played by the same characters.
The book, so they're taking a liberty. The book stories are very well. The book stories, the book, each individual six, each of the six mini stories weave together to tell one larger story, but there's nothing in the book that explicitly says this person is this person in another life. It's not like that. I don't think so. I don't think that was his intent. I think his point is, like, you know, part of it is, you know, the sins of the past and you know, reliving history and those kind of things. That's part of the idea, the overall theme of the novel, but they're making an artistic choice, the directors of the film, obviously with his blessing, because that whole story, which I discussed on the show before, David Mitchell, the blessing of the author, the directors are making an artistic choice to do this, to increase that feeling of interconnectedness and whatever. But it looks really exciting. So I'll post the link to all those different headshots. It's really cool.
Sweet.
That made me read, seeing that made me get back into Number 9 Dream, which is... God, I just love David Mitchell's writing so much. I cannot recommend enough The Thousand Autumns of Jacob de Zoet, which is the first one I read. Cloud Atlas is also fantastic. Number 9 Dream, I'm like halfway through, set in modern-day Tokyo. Really, really good. Really gives you a sense of place, of like what it would be like to be a teenager living in Tokyo, you know, 3 years ago or something. It's so good.
Is it realistic fiction?
That one is, yeah. I mean, it also includes, like, Yakuza, so it's kind of like a crime drama a little bit. It's like if you wrote, I don't know, Goodfellas, but set it in Tokyo. But it's good. It's cool, really man. Good. He is such a good author. I watched The Booth at the End. So I'm like...
All of it?
I have like two or three more to go in the second season.
Yeah.
I got my coworker into that. I like fucking blew up about that at work. I never do that. So I sold the shit out of that show.
It's real good, right?
Yeah, it's real good.
You like it too, Chaz?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Definitely, as these guys have said, studying character acting, like, interesting show. Fun show.
Yeah, I just finished season two, and I'm like, God damn it. Yeah. Why can't they make season three, like, tomorrow?
It feels like it must three? Cost, there's like, $4 to shoot. Like,
yeah, so why couldn't they just make the next one?
Yeah, they could make, it, like, guys. 12 seasons at once, and then just meter it out.
Yeah. I was kind of disappointed.
They gotta be all British about it.
I was kind of disappointed that it moved diners. I had grown attached to that diner.
I like the new diner now.
I think it's just whatever diner you're most recently acquainted with.
And the only couple of characters that overlap from season to season, also because I watched the two seasons like a year apart, like when they filmed them a year apart or whatever, those characters change so dramatically just from the first moment they show up on screen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like I forgot who they even were. I had to go remind myself.
Even the main guy changes somewhat. Like, he looks... I actually thought the second season was... Well, and I don't know. It feels like it's in a totally different time. Like, years
I think time,
past
time
or
is obviously past, but there, man, there's so much mystery regarding that
Love
show
it.
That's left unsaid. It's like 90% unsaid or unseen is what happens on that show. Yeah.
Which is the best part.
They're only giving you like a smallest taste, which is really, really good taste.
Yeah.
You're just like, damn it, I want the whole cheesecake or whatever.
Yep.
I watched Being Elmo. You guys seen that? It is a documentary.
I have not been Elmo.
It is
the documentary about the guy who plays Elmo.
Yeah.
Who's like a 6'5" black guy.
Did you hear about the Elmo that just got arrested?
No.
There's an Elmo in Times Square who just got arrested, for saying something really racist. Or...
You know, like Elmo does.
Yeah. Elmo's all about love of the white race. It's really cool. That guy had a cool journey, grew up in the projects, loved puppetry, and was like really supported by his parents to do that while getting, you know, incredible shit, as you can imagine, from everyone around him, and then turned into Elmo, and he's a total international star, and fascinating.
That just makes me think of Being John Malkovich.
Yeah.
You know, one of those great movies about a puppeteer, because there's so many movies about puppeteers. Anyway, go see that movie. That's good, too.
I saw a little mini documentary on the Grantland YouTube channel. It's called Draft Day with Royce White. This is really good. I definitely recommend everybody go watch it. It's 7 or 8 minutes long. It's really short, so there's no excuse. It's about Royce White, who is a top college prospect, his draft day into the NBA. And he is someone who should be like his caliber of talent based on his performance in college and his stats and everything should put him in like one, he should go one, two, or three, right? He should be in the discussion for the number one pick, except that he has depression and anxiety problems, right? He has panic attacks. And as such, he drops dramatically farther down the list and is in discussion, potentially not even for the first round, right? It's just such an interesting portrayal. I think a really healthy portrayal of those kinds of issues and how our society continues to marginalize people who have anxiety issues. Because and it's not even for his performance on the court, right? It's for this kind of ancillary stuff, like doing interviews and flying and all that other you know, kind of side things that come along with being an NBA star. Just really, really fascinating.
That sounds fascinating.
Makes you, I think, probably really good for most of America to see, right? Because it's someone who is in a position that is supposed to be like this super macho, I don't know, just someone who's like a role model who people can relate to, who people idolize, and yet also has this other thing. But I think it's really, really cool. And it's very well shot and interesting.
I have to mention that the two shows recently dealt with a character with severe anxiety issues. I thought very well recently. One was Mad Men.
Mm-hmm.
That was a while ago that I saw it. But Newsroom I just watched, and had a character with anxiety, and I thought they dealt with that like really, really well. Yeah. Those are some great scenes, especially the support characters around the person with anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like just brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. So games, Mark of the Ninja, which we talked about last week. That game is so good. Holy shit!
I see
that
so
game
much
is
press on that
so
now. Yeah, people are
good.
Like,
God damn, I love it. And it's really two games. It is it's a stealth action game if you're playing it going through and killing dudes. And it's very fun that way. You know, you have a lot of fun. You feel like a badass.
Are you about to spoil the shit out of it?
No.
With the next thing?
No.
Okay.
If you're going through not killing dudes, this is not a spoiler.
Okay.
You can play the whole game without killing anyone.
Okay. Spoiler.
And you get a major points bonus for doing that. And if you do that, it is a puzzle game. It's a total puzzle game because you like lean into a room and with your ninja sense, you like lean into a door and with your ninja senses, you can get a sense of what's on the other side. And you're like, there's no way I can't get through that room. It's so, totally impossible. So, there's a light. It's well lit. There are 14 fucking trip wires. There's a guard with a gun pointed at the thing that I need to get to. Like, it's impossible. And then you just think about what you have, you think about your capabilities, you look at the map, you're like, okay, well, there's an alternate way, and if I do this over here, and then maybe I can distract this guard, and I can go from this hiding spot to the... And it turns into a total puzzle game, and it's super engaging both ways.
That sounds great.
It's so good.
Yeah.
So, have you played it the shooting way and gotten through it yet?
Yeah. So, there are...
You get all the way through it?
No, I haven't finished either way. Okay. I'm trying to go through... The first time that you go through, you get incentivized for doing different things. So I'm going through and just trying to get like max points on each level so that I can get the most little, they're called honor points, and I can get, you can unlock different capabilities by getting those points. So
do
I'm
you
just
need
to
those
get...
capabilities to do the stealth mode?
No.
Because I'm thinking like I'd rather just play it through initially never killing anybody and see what happens.
Yeah, go for it. Totally do it.
But that's also way harder, right?
It takes a lot longer.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot more thinking.
It's much more meticulous, methodical.
You need some of them. You do need some of the capabilities. One of them is like a ninja smoke bomb. It's like, you know, throw it on the ground.
Yeah, so
smoke.
Can I get that without
killing
anybody?
You can get
anybody.
It without killing anybody, yeah. So you don't need to kill people, and you can definitely go through the first time.
Nice.
Fun to play both ways. There are... Boy, it's just so good. I can't recommend it enough. It's like 2D... I think game is $15. Really fun.
Yeah, and it started on XBLA and it's coming to Steam soon.
Oh,
so,
is it?
Yep.
Nice.
I think I might pick it up there, actually. Yeah, it's a good game.
And then I also, just briefly, I'll mention Agent Dash, which I just made these two in light of our Infinite Runner discussion of last week. I think we decided it's two of the three things that make Tiny Wings the best Infinite Runner. But I like it a lot. It's actually it looks freaking amazing on Android. Looks great. I don't know if there's an iOS version, but it's kind of like a cartoonish James Bond type guy, secret agent. It plays the secret agent type music. You're running, jumping, sliding, etc. And it ramps up in difficulty very nicely. It doesn't do the thing that we decided was great about Tiny Wings, which is giving an end to the game based on time only, but not making the thing that you're doing harder and harder. It doesn't do that, which is awesome, and Tiny Wings does, and more games should do. It does force you to react more and more quickly till at the end you just simply can't react fast enough, and it makes you die that way. So that's a knock against it, but as Infinite Runners go, I think it's really good. Fun. Production values are excellent.
You think it looks super amazing?
Yeah, it looks great. That game looks better than Crash Bandicoot.
Like, I think it looks like an up-res Crash Bandicoot.
It looks much better than Crash Bandicoot. Like, it looks amazing.
How did you bring that up? Like, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Because it looks very... Because
we're all thinking Crash
because
Bandicoot.
Because artistically...
Are we?
No, I wasn't thinking
artistically,
that at all.
Artistically, it looks... The character on the screen looks like that. He's got the elongated torso short legs.
That's
and,
why I thought of it, I guess.
And you're running forward with his back to the camera. And
yeah,
controlling
that is Crash played.
Yeah, it looks a lot like it, except it looks amazing, and it's playing on a thing that's like this.
I don't know.
Not, and by this,
I think it
I
looks
mean,
like
a
it,
tablet,
like
and it forces you to move forward, though. And
I
that's
think it looks like a bad
so
Kinect
Crash
Adventures.
Bandicoot.
It did.
Yeah,
you didn't. Crash Bandicoot was like forced scrolling.
there were levels that forced you to run that you were just running. And
there were levels, but that was not, that was the more the exception, right? Generally, you were moving at your own pace, right? Just like a platformer, like a 3D platformer. Like,
there definitely were levels
in Mario were there.
Okay.
And there are 4 scrolling levels in Mario.
Right. And I don't think anybody would necessarily say those were their favorite Mario levels. I think those are always lesser levels in general. Which is why I think the Infinite Runner...
It just increases the challenge.
Right, the Infinite Runner style is not as good as the non-Infinite Runner style.
Anyway, I don't think it looks that good. I mean, it's high res. There's a lot of, it's pushing a lot of pixels on the machine.
Yeah.
With a good frame rate. But
I think it's one of the best looking mobile games.
Apart from the frame rate and the res, like, the art is boring. It looks like Crash Bandicoot.
You think it looks better than Infinity Blade? Because I always thought that was like a...
No, not even close.
No, Infinity Blade looks amazing.
Like a completely different class.
Yeah. But Infinity Blade also costs $7, right?
And what does this cost?
Free.
Oh, see, free.
Looks, it looks all right. I mean, but it plays all right. You go down different channels and you pick up gems and you jump.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you slide and you shoot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a surprising amount
it's an infinite
of
runner.
There's
it's
a surprising amount of control dexterity, and you really do feel a sense of mastery as you get better. I will say that. So I'm not saying it's an awesome, super great game. I'm saying for an Infinite Runner, it's one of the better ones that I've played. And I brought it up because we had that whole discussion. So check it out if you're interested in free things that are pretty good.
I like free things that are pretty good.
There you go. You should check it out.
What else do you like, Mike?
I'll probably just play Tiny Wings instead, though.
How about Song Pop? We didn't talk about
it. Song Pop. No, I was going to bring it up. But yeah, let's bring up Song Pop.
Fucking Song Pop.
So it's the new Draw Something, the new Blank with Words, or with Friends. Go ahead, Josh.
Yeah.
Because you, or no, actually Chaz said play Song Pop. Well, actually, no, Ashley said play Song Pop, and I didn't
actually,
even know
what
Actually,
my coworker Dave said play Song Pop.
Okay, that's how it works, word of mouth.
It's competitive Name That Tune,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
With Friends. It's Name That Tune with Friends.
Except the,
it works pretty well.
At a random point in the middle of the tune, instead of always being the beginning.
Uh-huh.
And
it's the actual song.
You scored based both on how fast, but also on accuracy over 5.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you get all 5, you get a bonus.
Yeah, you do 5 per round.
And it's and you go back and forth, Draw Something style with Friends, and you unlock more songs the more you do the genre.
And more genres.
You unlock more genres, and you pay to get higher quality sound, but it's free and fully playable with slightly lower quality sound samples or whatever, which
and
is
you
pretty brilliant
get
way
rid of
to
ads.
Do it. Oh, yeah, also there's an ad bar.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's good.
Yeah.
It works.
That is my jam for this week.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
That will burn. We'll burn out on that really quickly.
We'll burn out fast, and I am already starting to burn out. Like,
on day one.
It just hit today, really.
Yeah.
Or it hit I bought it yesterday. I played like 1 or 2 games yesterday. Today we're really playing, and I'm already feeling like, fuck, I got a lot of games.
It's a problem because
it's so boring.
I did all my turns against you like way too fast. As soon as you do a turn, you already have it like a turn in your queue.
Yeah.
It's your turn already again.
Yeah.
I think that's it's just one of those inherent things about those games that like has notifications and
they
you have extra
chore.
Games. Well, the thing is, because your initial thought is, ooh, you know, I want to schedule as many games because as soon as my round is over, I want another round. And if I don't schedule games, then I'll just be waiting for the other person. So you schedule a bunch of games and then you realize, holy shit, I have like 8 games going now. Ah, and then you just, I don't want to deal with it, and you just shut the app.
And this is a game that actually takes you a little while to play each round.
And you have to be in an area where you can hear clearly or have headphones.
I can't believe you were playing at work repeatedly.
I've got headphones. But
So and one other thing that I think is a little lame about it is that the song
variety... I was also not playing at work. I was working at work. What are you talking about?
The song variety is fairly low, and they did it on purpose, right? Because they... They
fit
want you
the whole
to,
thing into a 15-meg file, and that's the high-quality version.
I think they want you to be work unlocking. They think it's going to keep you engaged to be, you know, constantly working toward unlocking more songs.
It's a carrot.
But that served to make me discouraged. I'm like, I think I would actually have been more interested if just everything was unlocked from the beginning and I had a lot of variety. Because as soon as I got, like, the same song 2 rounds in a row, because 2 different people chose... like, I've gotten Queen, literally, 1 Queen song and then another different Queen song right after each other in the same play, in the same game with somebody.
Yeah.
And I was just like,
the same thing happened with Draw Something, though. They repeat words constantly. And they don't even have, like,
Yeah, there is no excuse for draw something.
There's no unlock ability. They did add more words, which are essentially advertisements for products.
Are they really? It's Pepsi.
or Lady Gaga or, you know,
I thought you buy more or something.
No, you can't buy more words. Right. Which but is kind of lame.
Like,
because there are a million words. How hard is it to add
nouns? Just add nouns.
Just put the dictionary in there.
But to some extent, it's just like the birthday attack or whatever. Like, you only have to get, 23 people in a room before you have two
right.
in the room that have the same birthday?
Yeah.
Out of 365 days, right? So, I mean, the sample might be larger
than
that.
There are a lot more nouns than that.
Just because you're getting repeats.
It's not that. It's just that you have a very high likelihood after 23 people or something, right?
More than 50% likelihood. Yeah. So, I mean, there are probably a lot more samples than it seems just because you gotten a couple repeats.
Yeah. Understood. I think, even so.
Yeah, I think we're very sensitive, especially after years and years of having, like, the shuffle on our iPod we hate hearing, like, the same song. Or when we say, put a random amount of stuff on my iPod and it puts, like,
it's just knowing
stuff,
that it has,
you know,
more stuff in there for me that
right.
could be making the game better
yeah.
that I can't have arbitrarily. Like, I paid for it. I paid $2. Just
yeah.
fucking unlock everything. It's yeah. like when Forza, you buy a car pack, you don't actually get those cars. You get the chance to buy the cars with in-game currency.
What?
Yes.
Oh, my God. That's another reason why I've never bought any of those packs.
That's how Forza Cars Pack works. They are just now in the game and available for you to buy with in-game currency.
Wow. You're yeah. welcome.
It's fucking hard to get that currency, too. You got to play a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
Or you got to make a lot
or
of money.
Or you
got to
buy it. Ching, ching.
Can you?
Yep.
You can buy cash?
Forza 4, yeah.
Wow. I don't think I remember that being in there.
You can buy car tokens, which are like...
Oh,
each
right.
token
that's right.
is worth
now
a car. Or like the Bugatti is takes
well, or
three
you just
tokens
play the
or
auction house, you know.
Or yeah, you can do the auction house.
But it's
yeah.
pretty tough.
Yeah, yeah. So, Song Pop. Yep.
Song Pop.
What else, Mike?
Actually, Chaz, are you done? Are you good?
Yeah, I actually just took over your Song Pop talk.
We
had already transitioned.
Yeah, you started it, and then I'm like, oh yeah, yeah, we should talk about that. So, Song Pop. Check. I mentioned a couple weeks ago that I upgraded my computer. I got an SSD plus HDD thing in my Mac now, so SSDs are sweet.
But it's still a Mac, and you can't run Windows now.
Yeah, so something I learned that I didn't know at the time was that I can't seem to figure out how to put Boot Camp on my computer anymore because it doesn't seem to boot off a USB device, whether it's a disk drive or a thumb drive, which...
Because Apple thinks... You have an optical bay. Why would you need to boot
right.
from USB?
Right. Well, and the fact that I took the SuperDrive out is, you know, not really what they recommend, I'm sure.
But also
so
that
I'm,
other
I
feature...
I mean, I modded my Mac, essentially, you
but
know.
But also that other feature where you, like, boot to a optical drive in another machine. Does
remote
that
disk,
not
yes.
work for Windows? Or does
I don't
that
think it lets
not
you
work
boot
on MacBooks
to it.
It doesn't let you. It
disks?
Doesn't let you boot to it because that would have to be, like, in the EFI or, like, the bootloader. That's
it
only in OS X that you can do that.
That feature yeah. allows you to install software that comes only on a disk by, like, remotely
well, you have
using
to
yeah.
booted
it,
in.
It's generally for, like, MacBook Airs that don't come yeah. with a SuperDrive. Yeah. But
it's not technically infeasible. The EFI or
sure.
the BIOS could,
no, yeah,
could
but,
be network capable.
But I don't think
yeah, any
do
Blade
that.
Chassis does
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
it's certainly possible. It's they just don't do it.
I mean, the fact that they do anything to help you to install Windows almost seems like more than you'd think they do because they don't need to do anything to help
you
run Windows.
Can you install Mac from USB? Like, why don't they let you boot to USB?
No, you can install. No, I installed Lion off, I think, off a USB drive, but no matter what I did, I could not make a bootable Windows drive that would work. It just would never.
That's insane.
It get to a dark screen and like a blinking cursor or a note boot disk available or something.
Hmm. That means you can't make a USB utility drive either. Because, I mean, my MacBook would boot to bootable Windows mini PE type disks and or DOS based utility disks and shit like that.
It's possible it's different in Lion. I mean, I'd never tried this in Lion before.
But it's not in Lion.
I'd only
it's
done
in
it
in the hardware.
Well, and it could just be my Mac. Maybe my old Mac worked differently and this newer one is different and they changed
but
something
didn't you
about
find
it.
Threads according, that, where people were having the same problem?
Yeah,
no, I mean, I just don't think it's possible on this Mac.
According to the internet, it sounded like it was all MacBooks with optical drives. They only let, like, MacBook Airs boot Windows
well,
from USBs.
I had to hack configuration files to even give the Boot Camp Assistant the ability to make a bootable thumb drive. Because my model comes with a SuperDrive, the Boot Camp Assistant in the config file specifically disables the ability to make a bootable thumb drive.
You had to like pretend you're a MacBook Air.
I had to pretend I was a MacBook Air to even get that option, and then that option ended up making something that was unusable, so it was pointless.
Wow.
So anyway, that led me to try out some virtual machine software that I had not really... I'd only really played with VirtualBox before, because it's the free one.
Don't run games in VMs.
Except, shut up. I tried it in VirtualBox first. And,
tried what?
I tried to run any 3D game in VirtualBox. Mm-hmm. And
don't run 3D games in VMs.
That doesn't work. So then I tried VMware, which is not...
VMware Fusion.
VMware Fusion 5, which is not free, but I was able to finagle a free copy through other means. Not totally legit. And that also did not allow me to run anything 3D. I got a different error for running, say, like Fallout 3 or Just Cause 2 or even that free indie
not gonna happen.
Game.
It's going to be like an emulator.
So then...
You're going to be able to run like 10-year-old
then
games.
I converted my VMware Fusion VM to a Parallels 8 VM, and shit runs sweetly.
No way.
Parallels...
What game?
I can run Fallout 3. I can run Just Cause 2. I can
run... Under OS X.
Under OS X.
You can boot up
in a window. In a window.
And run Windows XP or with Windows 7.
Windows 7, 64-bit.
In a VM.
Ultimate Edition. Full screen.
Running Just Cause 2.
Just ran Torchlight 2. That was fine, too.
And it looks like an okay frame rate.
Just Cause 2 was one of the worst ones, but it did run... It was semi-playable, yes.
Wow. I totally forgot to talk about Torchlight 2, so we need to talk about that.
I'm getting
That's
to that.
Really impressive.
So Josh is a hater and didn't let me finish, but it worked.
I am curious, like, what the frame rate differential is. Like,
clearly there's going to be one, but if playable.
No, clearly.
I'm really surprised it's playable at all. Like, I'm shocked. I thought you'd be able to run, like, five-year-old games.
I would not have even, like, got into this if it wasn't going to work. If this was just going to be sad, I would have just said, yeah, I couldn't get it to work in a VM and move on.
But I am really curious to
everybody,
see benchmarks. Like, what does Just Cause 2 look like under Bootcamp, and what does it look like under Parallels VM?
Okay, so obviously it's not ideal to run it in a VM. If I could get Bootcamp installed, I would definitely do Bootcamp. It's not as good as Bootcamp,
sure.
And it never will be. I mean, that's just logical.
But you can
logical.
Actually play Torchlight.
It's just physics.
So you started playing Torchlight.
But you can easily play Torchlight 2 at max res with a perfectly fine frame rate. It seemed like it was in Bootcamp.
Nice.
So...
Torchlight is a really low requirement game.
Right. And
my laptop card is not good, and it runs Torchlight.
Yeah,
great.
And that's why I wasn't really using that as like the ultimate benchmark.
Yeah,
like
so
Just Cause 2 is much harder to get to run well, and it did not run as well. So, but
did you guys get a ferret?
A ferret?
No, man.
In Torchlight 2.
I've only got like to level 5. I haven't
don't
played.
Don't you,
no, you start
get
with
the
ferret?
Beginning.
Oh, I don't know. I forgot what it was.
I got the bulldog.
Do you get to choose, or is it random?
Yeah, you get to choose.
You get to choose.
Bulldog is so cute.
Yes, thanks to Josh.
Oh, cute. I don't know.
I'm playing Torchlight 2.
Bulldogs are pretty...
Pretty awesome. Pretty super awesome.
All right.
So I played Torchlight 2. That's awesome.
What's your pet?
I don't remember.
What's your class?
I don't remember what the pet was. I played it like once for 10 minutes. Jesus.
What's your class?
Engineer.
That's the one with the big old wrench?
Yeah.
Man, that's a good clunk.
Yeah.
All I did was look at the
Torchlight
character
2.
Creation
good
select,
clunk.
Select screen, and when you click on the engineer, they drop a wrench on the ground. It makes such a good clunk.
I chose the Berserker
I pretty
class.
Much chose the engineer just
I,
by.
I chose Berserker because I basically wanted like a Wolverine character.
That sounds pretty fun.
So, yeah. So that's pretty cool. You basically just punch dudes to death, and that works.
Are we talking
all.
About Torchlight now?
It's nice that you can be. Like,
if we're really
going to
talk about it, not yet. No.
Any of the classes with a guy or any of the classes with a girl.
Yeah, I'm playing a female engineer.
Yeah.
But because I'm all about women in science and technology.
It's funny that their animations are identical, though.
Are they?
As far as I could tell.
I didn't really notice.
So all right. So let's talk about Torchlight 2. But first of all...
We have been.
We got there way before
I actually listened to the soundtrack before it, which is done by Matt Uhlman, who you'll know from the Diablo games. Man, the title theme. I listened to that like on repeat a couple times. It was that good.
Really?
Fucking sweet
don't
ass.
Don't you think you're going to hear
it basically
of that
sounds
music?
Like Diablo.
Hear enough of it from playing? Why do you need to like listen to a lot of the soundtrack?
Why are
you
hating? Why are you a hater?
I'm just curious.
You're hating. Stop hating.
I'm just curious.
I like good music. Good music.
I predict that I might get sick of these songs, so I don't try to listen to them.
Yeah, but you
play.
Get sick of songs way faster than
That's
the rest of us
fact.
Do. So,
okay. Speaking of RPG music,
I'm really just jealous. That's why I'm hating.
Mike.
Yes, you are.
Mike posted something on Google Plus, which was a compendium of RPG tavern music.
Oh, God, that was the sweetest video ever.
So cool.
I loved it. It was so interesting to hear the similarities and differences between all these songs.
It's a cut together of, it's like a super edit
of Neverwinter Nights, Baldur's Gate, Icewind Dale.
The tavern song from each of those games.
It's like 42 minutes long of just tavern music.
Oh, Jesus.
Background music.
YouTube Supercut?
Supercut?
What? Is it a long YouTube?
Yeah, they got their hair cut there.
Yeah, it's a long YouTube.
It's super.
It's like 2 minutes of each song or something. I don't know. So Torchlight 2 is cool, and you know it.
Torchlight 2 is Torchlight.
Yeah, it is Torchlight, yep. And the thing is, like it.
It's multiplayer.
Yes. It's very easy. Oh yeah. Well, we should do multiplayer because that's really the meat and potatoes of it. Because the single player, it's just Torchlight. I kill
totally
things.
Torchlight.
Loot drops,
don't
and then
just play it. Schedule a night. Don't just play it. Let's schedule it.
Yes.
Okay,
but Torchlight.
But I think that's important to bring up, that the single player it's like the distillation of just kill loot, kill loot, kill
loot.
So
Josh, you haven't played any of it yet?
No, I just looked at
because you're the only one of us who's played Diablo 3. So I'll be curious about your
we'll get to it
comparison.
So
I studied
this
week.
So you got me and maybe Chaz a copy, but you didn't get yourself a copy of it, or you just haven't played it yet?
I got to the login screen.
Oh, well that took you 5 seconds of effort.
I got to the engineer clunk.
Yeah.
Oh, and you were just floored. It was like Fez. You just sat there and listened to the clunk.
I was like, this is going to be great to play. I'm looking forward to it.
But not right now.
So I'm playing a class,
particularly
that is,
for co-op.
I'm playing this engineer class, which is one that it's a type of. I almost always take a magic user or a ranged character. And so I'm playing this melee character, like two-handed weapons, no shield. I never play characters like this, and so I am having an experience unlike one that I would normally have in a game of this type, and that's kind of fun.
So it doesn't feel exactly like Torchlight to you just because your class is so...
My class is very different, but I mean, the mechanics are, like, it's Torchlight, and it comes with all those advances or all the things that made Torchlight cool, like sending your pet back to town to sell stuff.
Does it have new little tweaks?
Yeah, it's got some tweaks. So, for example, in Torchlight 1, you could send your pet back to town to sell stuff for you, and that was a giant innovation and step forward in the sort of Diablo franchise or Diablo-style game. What are they? Like loot? Dungeon crawl? In the dungeon crawl?
Yeah, top-down dungeon crawlers.
Yeah. In that genre, that was a big advancement. This one, not only can you send your pet back to town to sell stuff, but you can also give him a shopping list, and he'll buy stuff for you and bring it back.
Cute.
Right? Which is, again, cooler. The thing that I about the pets, one thing that sort of irks me is that you get fish and you feed the fish to your pet and make him, you know, turn into other
some
other
of them
things.
Are temporary and some of them are permanent, right?
I did get some permanent ones in Torchlight 1. I haven't gotten any permanent ones yet, but he spends so much time, you basically always have a fish in place, so you never get to see your super cute bulldog or ferret running around.
Stop using the fish.
Yeah, stop using fish.
The fish make him so much better that why would you deprive yourself of those stats?
Well, maybe you'll get a sweet-ass, like, kick-ass bulldog thing.
Maybe so, but it's, I mean...
Maybe he'll become a large bulldog.
Are you just playing on normal difficulty?
Yeah, I'm playing on normal.
Because
I play everything on normal.
Yeah, that's the thing is, I mean, like a lot of games, though, I honestly feel like a lot of the power-ups in these games on normal difficulty are just kind of like they're like almost superficial.
Well, I think you can switch it in time, can't you?
Well, no, but I'm just saying that, like, you're saying you're always that your pet is always on fish, but I feel like you could probably just never feed them fish and it would be just as easy.
Yeah, you could use more health potions, and sure, yeah, of course you could do that, but
so I'm just saying you don't need to feed them fish all the time, so there's your answer.
That's not my answer.
Stop feeding them fish. No. That's the answer. I don't care what your answer is. That's
just
the
put
answer.
It on hard.
yeah, put it on hard.
That's the way.
And then
no,
if you get a sweet ass giant bulldog drop.
If you put it on
droppings,
hard,
poop.
Then you definitely would. You'd want to be using the fish buff more.
Or
it's just a buff for your pet. My point is, they could have done buffs in other ways than making your pet look different.
I have the solution.
What is
for
the
you.
Solution?
Ready?
Yes.
Run a mod.
Mod the game.
That makes your... But I'm serious, because this game supports, like, user community mods more than a lot of others.
They're
Diablo
very big on that,
unlike
Diablo.
They're like, fuck you, modders, right?
Yep.
Torchlight is like, we love you, modders. Mm-hmm. So run a mod that makes your shit look like a bulldog no matter what.
Yep.
Easy.
Yep.
It's probably, like, already in the console.
But anyway, it's all the
pet
things
equals bulldog.
Basically, the things that you don't like about Diablo are not there. There's no real money auction house. You don't have to be connected to the internet to play it.
Mm-hmm.
It supports LAN multiplayer.
Did you say these are the things that people
the things
don't
that you
like
don't
about...
like about Diablo
right.
are not there.
Right.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although I'm curious, if you play a single player, does that character completely separate from your LAN / internet games?
I don't think so.
So you have all the shared.
They anytime, don't give a shit, man.
Anytime I click resume, it pops up. Do you want to play single player, LAN, or internet?
And so they just choose. They just switch some variables in the background, but otherwise it's the same character.
They do not give a shit.
I don't think they switch anything in the background.
You can bring up the console.
Well, I mean, you can now play with other people.
Yeah.
You could bring up the console, like give yourself some stats and gear, I think, and still play with people. Like, who the fuck cares?
Do whatever you want. $20. Let's not forget, it's $20.
It's not like an online ranking system that's super nitpicky.
Right.
Know?
Yeah, they're
like every game now.
They're the rough and tumble. Let's let you do whatever you want, rather than the super controlled.
It's a PC game, yo.
Yeah.
It's not this sort of like quasi console, which is created by forcing you to log into Battle.net every time. Right.
Even like Dungeon Defenders or whatever. You know, they had to have that separate network that
arena
was
or whatever. Yeah.
Trendy Net. Super strict.
Wasn't that trendy? Torchlight 2 is out. You should play that. It's only $20. I also checked out only for about 5 minutes because the intro takes 5 minutes. Black Mesa.
Mm-hmm.
So Black Mesa is out, and that is a mod of the original Half-Life in the Source engine, which runs Half-Life 2. So it's basically like taking Half-Life 1 and quasi making it look like it was made with the Half-Life 2 engine, but it's not Half-Life 2 level. It's just...
But it's better than the previous.
It's much better than the first Half-Life
Source.
Yeah, they upgraded quite a bit of stuff, and they even added stuff to the game. They, like, made certain levels bigger because the original engine could only make, say, like, a certain map so big, and now they can make it bigger. So, and they worked, like, a team worked on this for, like, 7 years, and it's totally legit, and it's going to be on Steam through the Greenlight program, except I got it just like over a torrent link, like from their website, which I have to mention, though, the way you get it, despite it being a legit torrent, the like clicking and finding like just the right download button, which then actually opens up like now choose a mirror
magnet.
And that takes you to a new page, which has like a bunch of links that are not the
even
download
the magnet,
link.
Magnet. Even the magnet one, you had to do a bunch of bullshit.
It still feels like sketchy.
Weak.
And I don't know why they have to do it that way, unless they're just trying to make money off the ads that are on the page. But
maybe.
It makes it feel icky. Like I think I screwed up the first time even getting, like, I downloaded it straight over HTTP, and...
Yeah, they had a couple direct download
and it was
links
corrupt.
That were, like FileZilla or whatever.
It was a 3-gig file, and I tried to open it up, and it was corrupt, so I had to do it again over a torrent.
Weak.
So that could be fixed. But it seems really cool, and I'm kind of jazzed just to play through Half-Life 1 again because I haven't played that game in forever.
Did you play Half-Life
They're waiting
1,
for you
2, and
in
episode
the test
1 and 2
chamber.
All the way through?
I played both of them all the way through. Yeah. I think I might have played Half-Life 2 multiple times through.
Yeah.
All right, cool, man.
Just the intro of that game is sweet. Like when you're just on this little tram into the Black Mesa facility was fucking revolutionary,
totally.
I think.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, like,
is
I believe
like 10
so.
Years old now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or
it's
more.
An old game, but it's still... It,
was that the
it,
first
it, it
thing?
It gets you, initially.
Was that the first game with the crowbar?
It's definitely the genesis of the crowbar meme. Gordon Freeman.
Yeah.
Half-Life 1.
There were
yeah.
other, you know, melee
I'm sure there
club
were games
implements
that might
before,
have included
but I think
a crowbar.
The crowbar was
Did
memed.
Unreal number 1 have a crowbar?
Maybe. I mean, I'm not going to say it's impossible.
I don't know.
But I don't... I
think
it's definitely
with
associated...
A
it's definitely
it has
associated
melee.
Most closely with Half-Life.
Yeah.
Gordon Freeman, the first thing you get is a crowbar,
the
and
wrench.
That's all you have for the first couple levels. Like, the that game doing the first person 100% of the time, in-engine 100% of the time, all cinematics, mm-hmm. or zero cinematics,
right? All in-game engine.
Everything that advances a story is... You, as a person in the space, you can walk around. If somebody's talking to you, you know, they turn their head and follow you as you walk around. That
yeah,
whole opening scene in Half-Life.
Tons of games do that.
So
now.
Good.
Yeah, that it seems Start totally with, normal now, but at that time, it was very revolutionary.
It was goddamn mind-blowing the first time I played
it. It was,
I had a friend, I actually got it played like for 5 minutes and called a buddy. I'm like, dude, come, like, he was one of those, like, the guy who live, you know, is your best friend because he lives close to you. You just come over, I'm gonna restart this game and you're gonna sit here and watch it. And we just both sat there and we're like, holy shit, it's amazing. Like,
and I have
how
to
can
say
this even be a thing,
even now just watching it again, it's still, you know, it sets a mood and an environment and a feeling like right away, unlike most games that just kind of like drop you and say, okay, now start moving and shoot things, you know. It kind of like slow burn.
But it's no Max Payne in-game cinematic, is it?
So I also, because I couldn't get Sleeping Dogs through Gamefly, because it was on the top of my list, but it was not available.
You're low priority.
Instead, the next, I'm like, all right, what other games are out that I might want to play? Max Payne 3.
Poor man's Sleeping Dogs.
So Max Payne 3 is nothing like Sleeping Dogs. I would not even compare it at all. I played the first Max Payne back in the day on the PC with Mr. like crazy flat face texture that is pretty much memed at this point. Now they are fully realized 3D models and not flat sprite faces. So Max Payne 3, I'm almost done with this game. I can't believe I've actually like almost beat it. But at a certain point, I got hooked and then I just kept going. And the game feels so fucking long. Like, it just keeps going. And I'm like, where is this story going? He just keeps going to different locales, and he just keeps getting more beat up and drinking more alcohol and popping more pills and shooting so many people and shooting so many wry one-liners. And he's just so depressed. And I'm like, what is going to happen here? How is this going to end?
I think that's
badly.
I think that's part of the Rockstar formula now.
I have not played a lot of Rockstar games, so I don't...
Rockstar feels obligated to make like a 40-hour game,
right,
when they should be making 20-hour games. That's why I compare it to Sleeping Dogs, because a lot of people don't finish Rockstar games because they're like targeted at 40 or 50 hours, and if they don't if they can't get enough story, then they pad it with tons of side objectives that you're either like really, really encouraged or required to do some, you know?
I think that's why a lot of people,
they should be doing it at like 20 hours or less so that normal people can play it. Now, they think they'll get less sales because they'll think people aren't getting their money's worth, or they'll get reviews that say this wasn't long enough or whatever. But Sleeping Dogs was so good, and it's like 15 hours or
whatever. I think a lot of people liked the Ballad of Gay Tony and the DLC packs. What was the other one, the Damned, the something in the Damned?
Lost and Damned. The biker gang one.
They like those better than GTA 4.
Yeah.
Just for that very reason. They're a tighter story, shorter, you know, more compact, better told.
So I'm not sure how long it is. I don't think it's 40 hours. I think it's actually more like 20, but...
It's not an open world game.
It's not an open world game. It's very linear.
20 is the new 40 for
I mean, it is, they're telling a story, and they're basically the makeup of a level is there will be a playable portion, which you will shoot a bunch of dudes, and you'll go through a locale, and there'll be tons of interspersed cutscenes in game engine. So you'll like go through a door, and it will switch to, you know, showing him like a movie and seeing some dudes and saying a bunch of stuff to himself, or maybe there'll be dialogue with other characters. And so there's lots of that. I would say there's almost as much watching a movie-ish kind of thing as there is shooting dudes sometimes.
Okay, so there's approximately 50-50 shooting dudes, action scene.
Yeah, maybe more shooting, it's a lot.
Seeing the in-game cinematic thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of story.
How much of it feels like open-world roaming, walking where you want
None.
To?
No, there's
investigating
it's
what
absolutely,
you want to.
There's absolutely no exploration or open world. So it is a linear
shooter.
Those cutscene
things, like, how much interaction is there in them?
Well, there's none. They take the control away from you. It's a movie.
They totally take the control away.
It's a movie. It's not
like
Valve. No.
Several minutes at a time, the time.
Yeah, pretty much.
Up to 50% of the time.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
But I don't know. I thought that, I mean, I don't know how uncommon that is.
That's pretty common.
That doesn't seem, it didn't seem
that's
weird.
It's just heavy.
Fucking Metal Gear Solid, like a 90-minute movie.
Metal Gear
Solid's
like 90 movie, 10%. Yeah. No, but see, the thing is, the action, I think what it gets so tedious is it feels, I don't know, I think I've played too many games, and I don't even think I've played that many, where you're like, okay, better get behind cover, okay, dudes are shooting, and duck out of cover, bang, 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 go back down undercover, reload, get up, shoot, cover, and then once they're all dead, the last guy you shoot triggers a, like, kill cam, like, slow, and he falls over, and then you start talking to yourself again, and you know that you're done with that room, and then you go to the next, you know,
right.
And the area combat, where there's
the
dudes.
The combat's not that fun?
No, the combat is fine, but, you know, it's mainly what I said, except with bullet time. And, I mean, honestly, I don't know how I would get through the game without bullet time. Like, I fucking exploit the shit out of that as much as I can. Like,
well, that's the whole... That's, like, for lack of a better term, the whole gimmick of Max Payne. That's
right.
The whole point.
And the thing is, like, a game, say, like, that's Gears of War, it feels like Gears of War, except with bullet time, which...
Yeah, but Gears of War combat was really engaging.
But it was still get behind cover and...
It's a stop and pop.
Shoot, yeah, it's a stop and pop game.
Yeah, but didn't you...
I mean, I'm not saying it's not fun.
Don't you remember enjoying
well, that was co-op,
Gears
though.
Of War?
I think maybe because it's not co-op, it's not as fun. Maybe that's why. I don't know. When you're alone and you don't have another teammate to interact with and there's no strategy between you and someone else, it's literally just you getting behind that ottoman and picking your head out and occasionally maybe moving to another thing. And then, depending on the weapons you have, maybe you'll
kill them faster. That
sounds like
bad combat.
I don't know. I don't know. It's... I mean, I kind of like the story, but I think, in general, the only reason why I'm as far as I am is just I got hooked at some point, and then I just felt invested, and I just wanted to beat it. But I'm definitely, like, getting to the point where I'm at the last chapter, and I'm like, Jesus Christ, just fucking end, so I can say I beat it. Like, I kind of, I've lost my verve for the game.
As I recall, so. You know, Sleeping Dogs was closer to thirds of, you know, action scene, combat, and open world exploration and shit, and racing and shit.
Yeah.
Or even maybe quarters, you know, like a quarter of it's racing or something. Driving, open world shit, combat stuff, and cutscenes. And the combat is really, really good. It's really engaging melee. And the driving's pretty good. The city's awesome.
I think another thing that makes the combat tedious is that I suck. And so I die a lot. And so having to redo, like, the same little scene, like, I mean, the checkpoint system is good, but I still died and had to go back and redo a lot of stuff. And so, you know, and there were certain times where I probably died, like, maybe 20, 25 times in the same scene. And this is on normal difficulty, so I don't know if it's hard or if I suck.
Can you push it down?
I mean, I could. Well, I don't know if I can do it in the middle of a game, but... I haven't tried. I don't know. I'm one of those people where I'm like, all right, I'm doing normal. I'm not gonna drop it down.
Sounds like enough to push it down.
Well, that's your limit. I don't really have a limit. I just kept doing it until I got it, and I eventually beat it.
Well, you do have a limit. You dropped Dark Souls.
Well, that's because that game is like infinitely harder than this game.
You think you tried 25
this game is,
times?
Is trivial compared to that difficulty.
I don't think so. I never go more than 20. I never go 25 times in Dark Souls.
Well, I'm not basing it on how many times I die. I'm just basing it on like. How easily I think I can overcome the obstacles. And this game, I can eventually overcome the obstacles. That game, I couldn't get past, like, the second level. I couldn't get past, like, the second boss, and I was just like, I'm tired of dying, and this is not going to happen. Whereas, I never got that stuck in this game. But anyway, I think it's a fun game, but I also think it can get tedious, and the story is pretty interesting, but it is pretty... It's dark. It gets pretty dark, and it gets
again. That's
it's not happy.
Max Payne thing.
Yeah, yeah, and you're right. You know that there aren't health potions. There are painkillers. So you're basically popping like analgesics the whole time.
Drugs
so.
Are bad, kids.
Yeah, and he makes plenty of wry one-liners about drugs every time you pick one up.
Really,
the voice acting is good, and there's like almost no repetition of any line. Like every line is totally novel throughout the entire game, which I must say is pretty good. So they recorded an insane amount of, like, voice for this game.
Of, like, pick-up pills dialogue.
Yeah, there's, like, 30 separate lines he says just about picking up a painkiller.
Oh, man, that sounds like a great YouTube supercut.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, it's funny in a dark, wry kind of way, but it's also just kind of...
Depressing.
It is not for kids. It is hella violent and drugs and prostitution, and it's just, yeah, it's a mature-rated game, but I don't know, you know. It's hard to say whether I recommend it. I mean, if you're really into that kind of game, it's a good game, but I'm ready
like
to be done
well
with it.
It's like it's well made, but...
I'm just ready to be done with it, yeah. I think that's pretty much what I've been spending my time the past few nights, just trying to beat that. As soon as I'm done with that, I'm gonna get heavy into Torchlight 2, so we should totally get all over that. I just wanted to mention one more thing. I went back to my like Google Reader starred list to July, because I have a backlog of stuff. And I watched this short film called 8888. That I'm not sure I want to say what that refers to, because I you know, it was kind of a cute little reveal 2 minutes into it.
Is it cute? It's a cute reveal?
Well, it was like, oh yeah, okay. That's neat, like, okay, where that comes from. Because I had no idea why it was called that, and then when I saw why it was called that, I'm like, oh, right, I should have been able to guess that.
Okay.
So maybe cute was the wrong word, but it was a neat little reveal.
Okay, because 88 is also a white power reference.
No.
So I was thinking it could be about, like, the Aryan Brotherhood or something like that.
No. Okay. It's completely tame reference. It has nothing to do with white power. It's actually, I don't know what I can say about it. It's only, like, 13 minutes. It was in a contest. I don't know whether it won. But I would think it was like in the semifinals. All I can say is it is a slow burn. Like half of the movie, you're kind of like sitting there thinking, what on earth is this about? Like what, where's this going? Like what is the, you know, this one main character doing something. You're like, what is she doing? What's the point of this? Wow. And then it happens and you're like, oh shit, this is what's this is what this movie is, or this video is about. Now what the fuck is going to happen? And stuff happens, and you should watch it.
Cool.
It's very good. And it also, a soundtrack was made for it, like that's like five times longer than the film. Nice. That's kind of a cool 80s like synth electro album that I listen to that's very good, that you should also check out.
Along that vein, to throw in one more thing, which I just remembered, there's a similar kind of little short film, which was Israeli, I believe, called Sight. That you may or may not have seen, you guys. It's kind of about, it's sort of like a pre-visual, like a visualization of what life might be like with augmented reality if we all had retinal implants and, you know, had, if life was kind of an always-on video game, which is actually really, really fun to kind of think about. They did a lot of thinking about what would it be like, you know, they do the normal stuff where you open the fridge and it pops up all the, you know,
information.
This milk is this old and, you know, you should probably drink this instead of this. And it is popping up all that information. But then it's like the guy is cooking an egg and there's like a little mini game on the surface of the pan.
It's which cooking
involves
mama.
Him sliding the egg over to get it onto a hot spot. And it like he plays a game that allows him to cook the egg better. And it's just like a fun little previous that eventually then has some kind of plot with creepy dark overtones. And you're like, oh, shit. You know, this might be scary also. So that's also, it's good, probably similar. It's like eight minutes. Cool. Sight.
All right. So that, yeah, I'm going to wrap up my part of that. So I thought about a main topic for this. I don't know if you guys are interested. Talk about Kickstarter. We've mentioned Kickstarter and what it is and some projects, but we've never really talked about it as a model. And there was an article recently that I thought was kind of interesting. The musician Amanda Palmer, who you may know from the Dresden Dolls and as a solo artist, recently did a Kickstarter for her album. She was asking, I think she asked for like $100,000, and she ended up getting like $1.2 million. So like it was a record for a musician on Kickstarter. And then she started a tour this month. And on the tour at the city she went to, she asked, like online or on Kickstarter or something like that, for musicians, like string players and brass players, to come and play on her tour. So they would like come and do, you know, somewhat simple parts that she would teach them to like kind of be accompaniment for her tour. And she was going to pay them, I think, in like beer and hugs, but not money. Like they were going to be unpaid. And the internet, woo! Uproar over that, especially after seeing that she made like 10 times as much money as she asked for. Like, they're like, why aren't you paying your musicians? Like, why are you forcing these musicians to pay for free? And there was a discussion on the AV Club today about that, and they were going back and forth about, you know, how true that sentiment is and whether they're whiners or whether they have a point. And I think the most salient point, though, was just what Kickstarter has done to our expectations about sort of the transparency of the accounting of the stuff that we love and pay money to be entertained by. You know, normally we don't really know necessarily, maybe with movies, but not necessarily like an album or a concert or a book, you know, how much money the artist has to use and how they use that money and whether we should have a say and whether, you know, the consumers should have a say in mm-hmm. how that money is used, especially in a forum like Kickstarter where we're the ones who gave her the money. Like, should we now own the ability to tell them how to use their money? Or if they want to spend 9/10 of that on, you know, cocaine and the rest of it, you know, the original goal on the product, is that cool? Or, you know, so does Kickstarter change anything? I mean, is Kickstarter like the future? Because I feel like everybody is using it and it's like the new way to make anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, even established companies
yep.
are going to Kickstarter because they're trying to go around the regular publishing, and artists, musicians are trying to go around the record labels, and they're like, just, you know, the people who are going to buy my product, you give me the money. Let's not go through the normal channels. So I don't know. What do you guys think about this?
If Kickstarter is the new easy way to make money, then... You know, Twitter and such is the new way for complaining to actually, like, be effective.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they're both kind of true to some extent. Like, when people whine about her choice to get a volunteer string player to go with her on tour, to some extent that doesn't matter at all, right? Who cares if a handful of people said that she should pay this person who... probably volunteered and said, I'll come play string
definitely
for
volunteered
you for, well yeah, I don't yeah. I did she get a bunch of artists for free, and then she did. Go tour
she
with
did.
Them
yeah this... some of them later came out and said, oh, you know, I actually, knowing how much money she made on the Kickstarter, I kind of wish I did get paid. Some of them are union members. They're like musicians local union members that had problems with it, and that was part of the controversy.
And I believe
there's a number of issues.
She changed her stance, and I think is now officially paying all of these musicians. And I think
that's funny.
I don't know if it was because of this or just.
Oh, it must have been, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess.
But part of it is that if the actual musicians came out and said, yeah, we regret it now.
Some of them did. But the thing is that some of them said, like, you know, hey, Amanda, why don't you come play? Like, by way of. Trying to flip the argument on her, I she was saying, look, this is great exposure for a bunch of musicians who wouldn't necessarily have gotten it. I'm able to give them huge exposure. And, you know, some people people responded by saying, hey, come play a free concert in my backyard.
It'll be good exposure.
I'll get a lot of people to come. It'll be great exposure for you. Kind of like, you know, fuck you. And I think that's a totally fallacious argument, because it's not the same thing. She actually is giving people huge exposure. She, you know... an onstage
which
concert
is a value.
Does have actual value. So there is, it's not like what she was asking for came with zero reward for the people.
But,
you know,
but
beer and hugs and a lot of exposure in your local music scene is not something to necessarily be sneezed at.
But the people who volunteered for her, you know, probably should have spoken up a bit when mm-hmm. they made the agreement.
Sure, if they were uncomfortable with
feel
it.
Free to agree to do that, but also feel free to haggle for a bit of yeah. name time, name dropping,
sure.
right? You know, if a paid backup dancer, you know, will go on stage for some singer and not have their name anywhere visible, no program material, you know, who cares? They got paid, right? They agreed to do it for sure. the money. But if they do agree to do it for free, like a sponsorship, they should get their name dropped a few times for specific, like, exposure as payment.
Yeah, agreed.
Like, she needs to be required to say their name at the beginning of her show, or put it, or, you know, print it on every advertising material. But, you know, that's their business sense they need.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, They Might Be Giants, they were on the AV Club's, I think it's called Underground, where they have artists come in and cover other artists' songs in a small round room, and they record it, and you can watch it for free on their site. They Might Be Giants recruited some of the staff of the AV Club to sing, I think, like as part of their performance or something. And then that was recorded, and I think that was also then used later, and I think it might have been sold or something. And every step of the way, like the person in the discussion was asking, like, you know, were we being exploited? You know, like, were we being exploited when we were asked to be a part of their thing and we didn't get paid? What about when... you know, that was then, you know, recorded and played elsewhere. What about when that was then sold for money?
Right.
You know, should we be really unhappy with They Might Be Giants for not paying us to, you know, perform on their song?
At what point did the exploitation start?
Yeah.
You know, what was the difference? What was the line crossed?
What is the value of being on a They Might Be Giants song that is now no longer worth as much as cash.
Yeah.
And
it's so hazy every step of the way.
Yeah. And I mean, in general, I think, and also just another point, I think Amanda Palmer on...
It's like there are 49 to 51 shades of gray involved in that.
Like, even before this tour, like, she has always asked for volunteers. So that's a normal thing for her to do. This is not just a new thing for this tour, for her to go to cities and say, hey, if you can play a string instrument, come and be in my band for a night. The difference is that now people know how much money she has. Like, they have a concrete number. You have $1.2 million. Why the hell are you still recruiting free musicians? Why aren't you paying them money? This is bullshit. You know, yeah. I mean, that was the argument, basically.
But why would she pay them money if she can get volunteers? Right.
Well, right. Yeah, why would anybody pay anybody anything if they could get volunteers?
You know, the PAX gets...
Why is my job paying me money?
PAX gets... Because I won't work for free. all volunteers to be security, basically. Yep. I mean, they probably hire some security guards.
Yeah.
But all their ticket or...
You know, enforcers.
Whatever. Yeah, they call them enforcers. They get a free ticket to PAX is their payment for being an enforcer all weekend or whatever. You know, more power to them if they have enough fans... That they'll accept a ticket as a form of payment. Like, you know, if she can get musicians that'll go on stage with her on tour for a while and can self-fund themselves during that, you know, I don't have a problem with that. But like I said, they should argue, haggle for their name time or whatever.
They shouldn't renege later,
you know, 6 months later, say, no, we should have gotten paid.
Yeah.
We got, taken advantage of. I think that's bullshit as much as
in her specific case, I think I'm mostly on her side. In the broader Kickstarter sense, I think a lot of the problem had to do with people misinterpreting what Kickstarter is and not really understanding it. The first time they heard about it, it was like the Pebble Watch, and somebody said, dude, there's this new cool gadget out and you can go buy it on Kickstarter. Right,
Kickstarter is not a store.
That's the first time they ever heard about it, and so they just think of it as a store. And you know, Kickstarter, what's the opposite of to their credit, to their discredit, doesn't do a great job of explaining what they are on the front page. Like if you just get deep linked to a product page or a project page, it is not necessarily clear that the whole structure, like you are giving a donation. What you are the
so
money.
when you give money or when you promise to give money or
pledge.
To pledge, don't you click like a checkbox or something that says I know this
do.
Is really just donating money that I'm not actually necessarily going to get a product.
And everybody has always read that information on every checkbox ever.
But I know I don't think it's like a 6-page terms of service you have to scroll through that nobody
There's
reads.
Nothing that's like explicitly obvious.
I thought it was
obvious.
Like a big obvious sentence or something.
It's not
recall. If it's
clear,
not, then they should improve that. I agree.
Yeah, it's not. You bought the Pebble Watch?
Yeah,
right?
I don't recall.
Yeah, I don't. Really
I knew what
recall.
It was, so I didn't specifically pay attention.
Yeah. So I bought like 6 things on Kickstarter. I funded like 5 or 6 projects, and I have received one of which is the
California
headphones, which I got. I forgot to bring today, which is, you know, dumb, but I'll bring them next week.
Quick question on that.
Yeah.
Does it feel like, is there a weird vibe that you actually funded a Kickstarter, it happened, and you received a product? Because at this point, nothing I funded has even like gotten to the like actual production phase, because it's all like video games, so it's a lot of like early design.
It's all
like the cloud to me at this point.
I have only funded stuff that were tangible products.
Well, these are tangible products, but they're nowhere near being done.
Yeah, I'm just sort of describing my process as I've only funded stuff that were tangible products and were pretty big. Like I basically came to everything. I think I've only funded 2 things that hadn't already reached their funding goals. Like when I funded the Pebble Watch, that's not true. The Pebble Watch I funded after it had reached its goal. I funded California headphones before they had reached their goal, but it was pretty clear they were going to get there. They were like 2/3 of the way and it was day 3 or something. So I'm like, okay, they're going to make it. I funded these like magnetic lights that attach to bicycles. So they're like the front and rear headlights. It's actually a really cool project. Copenhagen Lights, if anybody wants to go on there and get themselves some sweet bike lights. They're like $30 and it's a really cool, like you attach it to the front of the bike, any steel frame bike, and it instantly turns on and you pop it off magnetically and it turns off. And so you can just have these, you know, cool integrated sleek looking bike lights. That one I funded, but they just reached their funding goals, so that's going to happen. But I'm aware, and I know that Kickstarter, that what I'm doing is making a donation, and it may well not happen.
Yeah.
Flint and Tinder is supposed to be... They just sent me the thing today saying they've started their first shipments. I got my California headphones. Flint and Tinder are shipping. The Pebble Watch, I have no doubt that that's going to ship. That
it's
one's
real
too
close.
Huge.
They have the steel mold of
They're shooting test parts and stuff, and they've been really good about putting out updates.
I saw a pile of buttons.
Yeah,
they made a pile of buttons. Yeah, they're close.
Did you choose your color? What color did you
black.
Get? Black. Yeah, I went with white.
If white had a white strap and white buttons and everything, then maybe. But it still had like black sides.
I mean, you can replace the strap.
It had like black sides and black buttons, and I think it came with a black strap.
And
I don't know. I didn't want the two-tone. I wanted a single tone.
I'm sorry, I misspoke earlier. I have funded something that has actually come to pass. The San Diego Public Market came to pass, and I backed that, and I haven't had a chance to go check it out yet, but I'm looking forward to it.
Well, don't they have to build it or something?
Well, it's starting out small. It's only open like a certain number of hours, and yes, it's only like a certain amount of space, but they want to be open longer and expand. Yeah. So, but the initial whatever, I don't really know, actually. That's why I want to go check it out. I just know that it opened like 2 weekends ago or something, so...
It's like a farmer's market in Barrio.
Right. It's sort of like a Pike's Market in Santee, or in Seattle.
Seattle.
So, yeah. So you guys think that, like, Kickstarter is, like, this is it? This is how, you know, this is the best way to get creative projects to, like, happen?
Well, interestingly, they just changed their like, terms of service and requirements for posting stuff on the site. They just had, a fundamental rules change, right? So I think that you can now no longer... You can now no longer have anything on your Kickstarter page that is a rendering.
What?
They Why? Just they just changed this. The only thing that you can do is show whatever working prototypes you have.
Oh.
You can't actually show
like a 3D Studio Max.
There's like some rule. You can't. I think you can show that stuff, but you can't offer like that as the reward for. Ones where you're showing the rendering. They added a bunch of rules to try and combat this problem. I don't recall specifically what they were, but it's along those lines. They're basically trying to make it more apparent, make it more evident what you're actually signing up for. Like, this is not a product yet, because some of the renderings look... Like, the renderings of the Pebble Watch looked amazing. They looked just like them, like I imagine them to look. But nothing existed, right? They were completely just, rendered in CAD software or something. So,
yeah. My opinion is, if they change their terms of service, if they put a larger text before you click the OK, I pledge money button, those are good improvements. I agree that those should happen if it's not clear to people. But I'm not sure how much of a problem people not understanding Kickstarter is. Maybe those people, there's a lot of them and they exist. I'm underestimating it, but I have a feeling that a lot of the people complaining about some of these Kickstarters that are getting funded, they're not the people who are giving to the Kickstarters. If the people who gave up to $1 million to someone, who pledged that money, then go, wait, I didn't understand what I was getting, or what I was not getting, I want to take back my pledge, but it's too late in that I'm angry at you. Mm-hmm. If there's a lot of those people, then I agree they need to change a lot of their terms of service or whatever to make it more clear. But if it's just completely independent people saying, I can't believe there's people that gave this girl $1 million, those people are just whiners on Twitter I would ignore. But like we said, or like I was trying to say earlier, but it didn't quite get to it, enough people complaining, vociferously enough, like that becomes news, is enough negative press to actually make change happen. Mm-hmm. And if I think in general, it's almost like a self-policing system now. If enough people get angry about some instance of this kind of thing where somebody takes advantage, then they get enough negative press that they go back on it.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome, the power of Twitter now or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think when you said at the beginning that Twitter is a way for people to complain effectively, and Kickstarter is a great way for people to make money. It's like, yeah, those are both good things, and they work in concert pretty well.
Yeah, they do. It's almost a safe self-policing system.
Yeah.
But do you think Kickstarter will eventually, take over the the regular model of
no
no so well, and, what, would it that ever on happen
what models
well like, no I mean okay for like a musician say for example who wants to fund an album
yeah
they don't want to go through a record company. They already, obviously, having an established fan base is kind of required because...
Totally key.
And okay, the, but let's just assume it is. Like, is that the best way? Like, should Amanda Palmer ever go to a label
this
again?
This was one of the only interesting arguments...
Obviously, she can get money. Like, why would she ever go back to a label?
This was one of the only interesting arguments that was raised on the Kickstarter, on the Onion comment thread that I hadn't considered yet. Somebody said, look, this is just a new way for someone like Amanda Palmer to take pre-orders. Like, you can think all you want that I'm taking part in the creative process or I'm donating something. You're not. All that's really happening here is someone's taking pre-orders. And I hadn't considered that as a point of view because all the stuff that I've funded has not been like a game or a book or an album. It's been like a bike light or a watch, right? Something, you know, or underwear. I literally, you know, Flint and Tinder is underwear. So I did not... I hadn't really thought about it that way, but I think that's right to the extent that it goes, and I think that it's probably a pretty good model as just insofar as it gets a third party out of the way of the artist and the consumer.
Because I just figured that if she were on a label and she were actually officially taking pre-orders, everybody who gave money for the pre-order was under a fairly rock-solid assumption that a product would come to them. Whereas yes. with Kickstarter, there is absolutely no guarantee that there will be something.
Well, part of the guarantee is the Twitter voice we discussed. Like, if she doesn't produce, she's going to get mad negative press and maybe never be successful again. Right? She's going to ruin her goodwill with all her fans.
But I think, and I also think that most pre-orders that you do with a major company, like if you pre-order a game, any time before the game comes out, and if it never comes out, that's forever, you can go and get that money back from GameStop or whatever.
Right.
So if you pre-ordered, and that is a difference to Kickstarter, like once you pledge the money, if the project gets funded, the entity gets that money and they go do with it what they will, and you can't necessarily go get it back. So in that case, it is a worse deal for the consumer.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess that's the issue that I think holds it back, is that guarantee that you don't get, that they could just take it and go to Vegas and fritter it away. I mean...
Yep.
They're under no actual obligation to give you the product.
Yes.
Except at the cost of their goodwill, yes. I mean, it would be a poor decision to not try, but they could try and fail. You know, maybe it just doesn't work out. And, you know, and I mean, do they still lose their goodwill? Would you...
Maybe she's really bad at writing songs now.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe she has horrible writer's block and doesn't write anything for years.
Yeah.
But she still has your $1.2 million to, you know, cushion her writer's block on, you know.
Too bad.
Yeah.
Now, it's interesting that, like, you know, Louis C.K.
on Twitter.
Louis C.K. is doing a version of this model, which is, but he's putting in like two or 300 grand up front of his own money to fund the production and rent the theater and do all the promotion
and set
whatever
up the
else.
Site and the e-merchant.
Yeah, so he's there's a bunch of money that he's able to put in because he has the capital to do so, and then he doesn't have to deal with Kickstarter or
did
their
you,
rules.
Did you hear what he did recently? He's using that whole website and everything. He's done like four things with it now.
Uh-huh.
He did the video, and then he did an album, and then he maybe did another album, and then
circumcised
ticket. He's circumcised Ticketmaster
in a way.
Boom, take that.
And he took orders through his site for tickets to a live event.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He wasn't coming anywhere nearby, or else I would have been.
Definitely.
All over it. Yeah. But that's super cool.
Which only he can
fuck
do.
Fuck Ticketmaster.
Well, only,
that's like what Pearl Jam tried to do in the mid-90s and failed.
And totally failed, right?
Yeah.
Only people who have the magic kind of coming together factors of a rabid, large fan base and not so huge that they can play small-ish venues, right? Like Pearl Jam's never going to play a 1,500-seat theater. I mean, probably they do occasionally, but that's like a small-ass show for them. That's like an intimate venue, right? And Louis C.K., you know, he probably plays, you know, 1,000 to 2,000-seat venues, and that's really huge for a stand-up, right? So there's like a little golden zone where like I can sell all the tickets and I pretty much know that I'm going to sell out the show and I can do the math and know I'll make my money and therefore I can say fuck Ticketmaster, but very few people can do that, right? Either you're too huge and you can't do the promotion on whatever, the sports arena or the Staples Center, or you're too small and you don't have the fan base to do it.
So if you can, more power to him.
Definitely.
So even
and fuck Ticketmaster.
Yeah. And
fuck Ticketmaster.
And Jeff Gerstmann. So
but not Islam.
Right. Islam.
Ding.
Praise be upon.
Yeah. So Kickstarter are good, but the whole established fan base thing, I mean, it's still, if you're a nobody, you can't go on Kickstarter and magically think you're going to get a bunch
of
money.
I think a lot of people
think they might be able to do that.
I know what you're saying, Mike. It's a little disheartening to like the whole spirit maybe of Kickstarter to help indies like get going.
Right.
Now it's like it's only effective for well-known people who already had a record company, you know, create them through their press engine.
I think for music and movies and books and stuff like that, but things like the Pebble Watch,
yeah,
you know, no one knows them, but it was a unique product. So if you're making a non-unique product like an album or a book, then you have to have the established fan base because there's billions of people making books and music, but there's only one company that's making the Pebble Watch.
Yeah, this bike light, it's Copenhagen design. It's two people. I don't so it's a
I have hundreds of bike lights. That's not unique anymore.
Why would you want it to go off when you pull it off and go on when you stick it on? Why would you want to leave it on?
Why do you need it on when it's not on the bike?
You magnetically attach it and then it turns on.
Yeah, why wouldn't you want to leave it attached all the time?
Because you're riding your bike during the day.
Like, what if you
so you ride can move your it from bike to bike?
What if you ride your bike at night?
I have four fucking bicycles.
Yeah, most people have one.
Oh, you have
bike,
four bikes? Yeah. Jesus.
Yeah. I have my hipster fixie bike. I have Copenhagen. Actually, Copenhagen. I have a Copenhagen style, like Dutch, you know,
Jesus,
just ride around town bike that is big enough that I was able to attach the bike seat for Charlie. So that's what I used with Charlie. Jessica has a hipster fixie bike that I built her, and I also have my like race bike exercise. You know,
I was about to say Jesus road Christ, bike. But maybe I should say
yeah.
Muhammad, peace be upon him.
Flying spaghetti
so you
monster.
Can swap these things from bike to bike, and you buy one set of bikes, one set of lights, and yeah.
Yeah, okay.
We are not in this demographic, obviously.
Sound like
of multiple bike having.
Yeah.
I was thinking, like, if you drive your bike somewhere at night, you don't want to leave the light on while you're in the coffee shop or whatever.
Right.
So you'd have to detach it and, like, carry it around with you.
Yeah,
or...
but it's, like, this big. They're super slick. Right. Anyway, but, yeah, that is, like, a two-person shop of product designers, not, like, industrial designers. So part of what they're using the money for is, like, paying CAD renderers and, you know, people who can actually manufacture the product, et cetera, et cetera. They just had this cool idea, but they're super indie, like, and they are making a go of it. So, as you say, with little products, I think it can work for small shops who don't have a bunch of experience.
By the way, local Costco right now has an awesome set of cruiser bikes. Like a guy's one that's all black with a brown leather seats and handles, and a girl's one that's like white and
like beach cruisers.
Yeah, like white and red or something. And they look really nice. They're single gear or whatever, and they're like $130.
Mm-hmm.
They're so cheap. I really wanted to get one and just like ride it once,
and then you could return it.
You could return it.
Because Costco's return policy is epic. All right, so I think we properly kickstarted that.
Yeah, should we do a Tem Kickstarter?
I don't know.
We just did.
Yeah.
What are you talking
about?
Well,
no, we do that every week when we ask for money for
That's
Amazon.
True.
Well, or to use Amazon. We're not asking for money directly. Do you still want to do your BGE?
I'll do it.
All right, Chaz has got a BGE.
I got a best game ever. And
hit it.
You know,
you're
going to
hate this game, Josh. This is going to be a huge argument.
Uh-oh.
Are you?
I thought you said SML.
No, SMW.
Doesn't that mean Super Mario World?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, then I'm down.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, you like that game too? That's so weird.
Yeah, we have no Mario game on the best game ever.
It's because fuck
shelf.
Mario.
Yeah, that's a horrible series.
And goddamn, Super Mario World is really just it's my favorite Mario game.
Did you play it
game.
Again recently? Is that what you brought up?
I played it again. I played it all the way through. I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago, and I 100%ed it.
Your laptop or something?
Yeah, on an emulator. when nice. I got my when I first got this NES to USB adapter and could again play it. And
I think I have my copy in a box.
Oh, it's so good.
The original Super Nintendo version?
I still have my Super Nintendo and my games because that
and it works?
That collection was so good, I could not get rid of it.
Yeah, it is a good
So collection. I still have it all in a box. Now, I don't know. I haven't turned it on
Now, do you have a TV that can use
the RF? My last adapter.
The little switch.
Probably broke like
always three.
8 years ago.
Never did four.
I still have a broken RF adapter in a box, too.
Uh-huh.
I think it's broken though.
Okay, Chaz, tell us why Super Mario World is a best game ever.
Well,
Over all the other hundreds of Mario games.
There are other very good Mario games. Super Mario Brothers, good. I wouldn't say it's excellent. It's good. It's
decent.
It's pretty good.
Playable.
Super Mario Galaxy, very good.
I heard it's good.
It's good.
I would say that's a great game.
It is a great game.
Played it a bit.
My favorite Mario game is Super Mario World, and it was one of the. I just think it's Morimoto. At his best.
You mean Miyamoto.
Am I thinking of Chef Miyamoto?
You're thinking of the Iron Chef.
Iron Chef.
I mean, he's also good.
He bites into a Nintendo controller.
Yeah. Crunch. Yeah.
No, that's the other guy.
The Chairman Kaga.
Miyamoto. Japanese correct.
What's his first name?
Shigeru.
His last name?
Shiggy.
Shigeru Miyamoto.
Shigeru Miyamoto.
At his best. Just such a great, a completely terrific... holistic art style, sort of the whole game has this intensely cute, enjoyable, super fun art style to it. It's just impossible to be pissed when you play that game, even if you're getting to like a frustrating stage. And it does have some really challenging platforming sections. Like the best Mario games, there are a lot of very easy levels, and you can make your way through the game pretty easily. But there are also levels that are optional that are very hard and, that are quite challenging.
The star levels, perhaps?
The star levels, are a perfect example of that. The fact that almost every, maybe like 60% of the levels have a secret exit, the key exit, the alternate exit.
Mm-hmm.
And you would only know that because the dot on the world map is red. Mm-hmm. instead of yellow, and so you're like, oh, maybe there's something else in there, and you can go in and play around and try to find it. I loved finding all those different secrets. I really think it has basically perfect platforming and controls. Like,
it's what other games are modeled on.
It's what all other platformers are trying to achieve, which is this total perfection of like every. I mean, it's one of the first ones. I guess Mario 3 had different suits. So you would have, you could get like the raccoon tail, which allowed you to fly, and the frog suit, which allowed you to swim. Super Mario World had that, as well as having Yoshi. I believe it's the first one that had Yoshi.
Mm-hmm.
And Yoshi was a completely different animal, haha. On top of the suits, so you could... you'd have to power up Yoshi, you'd break the egg, and you got the little tiny Yoshi, and you fed him enough enemies, and then you could jump on and ride him. And he added a completely different play style. He had the tongue, and he could eat enemies, or the different colored shells would allow him to breathe fire,
sacrifice him into a pit and get an extra double jump.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
And you had to.
You had...
To get certain hidden things, I think.
Certain hidden things required doing
Did
that.
Did you see that really recent text, iPhone screenshot text online that... said, oh my god, I just lost Yoshi. Can I get him back? Like somebody who played Super Mario World for the first time ever had just gotten Yoshi and just lost him for the first time.
Oh, that was a horrible moment
was
as a
so,
kid.
Yeah,
he
so
runs
distraught.
Away and you're like, no, come on,
he got away. Do I ever get him back? Oh man,
you didn't know. You had no idea. You thought that was it.
Yeah. The game has great music.
Koji Kondo, excellent.
Yeah. I just really love
the Tanuki suit.
Is that the? It had the cape. It didn't have the Tanuki suit.
Yeah.
Was it Mario 3?
Mario 3 had the
was the leaf that turned you into.
I love the
Tanuki little tail.
Suit.
The Tanuki suit is super cute.
Oh my
it's
god!
It's like off the charts cute. But the cape had a really great mechanic, which was
that
actually
was good. That
a
was
lot
the
like
Just Cause 2.
Is Just Cause 2?
And
it totally
nice.
Is.
Yeah,
it's
glidey.
This kind of back and forth swooping thing
that
you
bring. Oh, that mechanic.
So good.
Totally, yeah.
That's straight
you
free
song. You could slowly get
right there,
higher
man.
With that, right?
I don't know. I think you could maintain level flight. I don't think you could get
Creed
higher.
Creed can get you higher.
That is it. That is the new Infinite Runner, is the Mario cape that's kind of like Just Cause 2,
yeah,
with an arbitrary animal character, except that if you do it just right, you can get a bit higher.
But isn't that just Tiny Wings without the hills?
It's yeah, Tiny Wings but backwards. Different.
It's Tiny Wings backwards.
Yeah,
you know, okay. isn't Crash Bandicoot just like the Tiny Wings but forward?
I don't know. Never really played that game, so... you guys apparently yeah, had quite a lot of
Crash Bandicoot. Yes, it's a variation on Infinite Runner.
Yeah. Wasn't that the launch title for PlayStation?
Crash it Bandicoot? Was one of them, yeah. Okay, yeah. It was definitely in the...
I got FF7 and played that for out. Like... months, so anyway.
Ridge Racer was in there.
Ridge Racer.
I don't know, you guys like Super Mario World?
Oh yeah, no, it's you a filling game. A,
where do you put it on the list of Mario games?
Easily at the top.
Yeah, I think it, I mean...
That's
yeah.
my feeling too, it's like there's no contest.
It's not even it's, close. It I was... mean, Super Mario Sunshine was great. I played the shit out of that, I got a lot of stars, I painted over a lot of graffiti with rainbow water juice yeah. or whatever the fuck. I don't remember. Super Mario 64, you know, like one of the rare like first 3D games that was phenomenal because mm-hmm. A lot of them I thought failed.
I feel
and
like
some people think it failed.
I think they're both up there, but it's hard to directly compare them because of the change in
Mario 64.
Yeah, Mario 64 and World.
I just feel like
World is the top 2D one and 64 maybe is like
no way. The 64 best 3D one. Is definitely not the best 3D one. Galaxy is much better, and I feel yeah. like 64 so does
what
not
about Sunshine?
Age.
I think Galaxy is better than Sunshine. Yeah.
Okay.
And 64
Sunshine was
does
underestimated
not,
though. That was a
it was
great
real
game.
Good.
Yeah. yeah. People shat on that because you had to use a water cannon.
No,
I don't know
great.
Why.
Which is asinine because you used suits and powers in like every other Mario game except one.
Although I think in general Mario has been known for those are additional but not required, whereas Sunshine required yeah. you to use the water
okay,
thingy.
Okay, that feels fairly arbitrary.
Mario 3 is real good. It had the Tanuki suit.
Yeah.
But I think Super Mario World just surpassed it in
it
every
did.
Level.
The thing about 64 is it does not hold
suit.
Up.
Yeah. I think the cape
but
was...
But therefore, why didn't Yoshi's Island surpass Super Mario World in every way?
Because I don't think... Because nobody played that.
Yoshi's Island is...
I never played it. I never really played it.
Yoshi's no. Island is just like a pure sequel to Mario World. It's just like more of it.
Kind of.
I don't
but
really
feel
that... But the
art style
that,
is also
if
like
it was a,
totally
if it was
different.
A sequel, why wouldn't it... be better, like we're saying.
Well, sequels are often
well,
not
Mario
better.
Galaxy 2 didn't sell as well as Mario Galaxy.
Yes, but as far as 2D went, you know, we're saying like they steadily improved
yeah.
every step of the way in almost every way.
I think that was more parallel.
Except Yoshi's Island.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It went back downhill curve after
yeah.
Mario World.
Maybe it was like a B-team. Like, you know, they went off to develop
yeah, we don't know what happened,
the
right?
N64 stuff and, like, the A-Team Miyamoto, and then they had, like, junior designers doing...
About Mario RPG.
I never played it.
You never played that?
No.
What is wrong
that
with
that was
you?
Near the end of the SNES, and I think I might have moved on to PlayStation
that was
by then.
Like, that was the prime time. That was one of the best
I know. I missed it. I missed
SNES
it.
Games.
I've heard it's very
I
good.
I didn't play
it
either.
It.
I played Super Paper Mario the Thousand Year Door.
It's the reason you like the Penny Arcade bullshit.
Right, I understand that.
Because you never played Super Mario RPG.
Right, I didn't get it
that's
out of
why
my system
it seems
yet.
Like this new mechanic to you. I'm
I
like, yeah,
it, well, I didn't
I
think
played
it was
that
new,
in
but
high
it was
school.
It was somewhat unique.
Yeah, it is somewhat unique. Still, nobody has
okay,
done
so that game since. And Penny Arcade use it then.
Basically, yeah.
yeah okay, uh-huh. Two games ever.
Yeah, but
that's
it's
not
old
too
hat
much.
To Penny Arcade, you know?
yeah, to Super Mario RPG vets like
exactly.
yourself.
What mechanic are you talking about?
It's the JRPG,
yeah.
where when you select attack uh-huh. mob A yeah. or whatever,
it's timing
like
based.
Then when your little dude jumps on his head, you hit A again
oh, yeah, yeah,
right
yeah.
when he jumps
yeah.
on his head. And if you time it precisely, you get a critical
bonus.
Hit or
yeah.
whatever. Instead of the crit being a random chance, like you have a 20% chance to crit, you literally can crit 100% of the time that you perfect the press.
Yeah.
But if you press it too late, it might miss entirely
yeah.
or make you do reduced damage. It's like the Gears of War reload mechanic mm-hmm. where you can either tap to reload at a normal pace or you tap to reload and then tap again in that precise little window to get a like ultra fast reload where he goes like fuck yeah or whatever he says when he reloads fast, and if you miss on this second press
it takes you a long time.
He like jams his gun and he goes damn it or whatever
yeah.
So I played Super Paper Mario the Thousand Year Door, which is like the Mario RPG sequel on
yeah,
GameCube
yeah, yeah.
which had that same business which is good, and I believe that there were I think Final Fantasy 4 Whichever one was 4, which is actually 6, that was released in the U.S. is 4.
2/4. 2 in the U.S., 4 in Japan.
Yeah.
Okay, well, whatever was 4 in the U.S. had...
you mean recently 4 in the U.S.?
No, I don't know. It was on the SNES.
There was...
No. What was the big one on the SNES? The big Final Fantasy
3. That was 2. Well, 2 and 3.
3 was the big one.
Okay, so probably 3. I don't really know the
2 was Cecil, 3 was Kefka.
Whatever.
3 was the big one.
Whatever. That's classic. You should know it.
I do not know it.
You should know that shit.
It was the Moogle on the front with the dark purple cover. Yeah. It was 3.
And 2 was like the sword with the red background.
The only one I ever played to completion is 7. So,
oh my God.
Is 8.
Oh, 8. No.
Don't
no.
you cloud.
Don't you dare denigrate
Final
Fantasy.
Can't be the only Final Fantasy you've
anyway,
played.
Anyway, continue your thought.
Okay.
That one of the ones on the SNES had a character that you did like fighting game combos with.
That was 3. That was Saban. Okay. Yes. Like fire Street Fighter moves.
Yeah.
Fireball. Yeah. It's kind of like I think those are cool when they make
Saban,
you
by the way.
Whatever. When
fucking nerds,
Saban and Eater.
No, this is just one of those things. Like when you've only seen a word written down your whole life and never said
and
it out loud, you hear it the way you read it when you were in high school.
Yeah. Mooglay and Loke,
Tone Loke.
That was Locky,
right? It was Locky and Tara. Anyway, I don't even know where I was going. You were saying
Super
something.
Mario World is really good. It definitely good. Deserves to be a best.
No, I was
game
just
ever.
Gonna say it's sort of like. Link to the Past is to like the original Zelda. Like the original Zelda was great, but the Link to the Past is just so much better in every way that you can never say that the original
Link to the
better.
Past is pretty much the only Zelda in my eyes. Fuck all Zeldas except Link to the Past.
I really fell off the wagon after the Super Nintendo and like never played any Zeldas after that, so there's so many I missed.
You know, I played
and I tried to play
I played the
Ocarina
Wii one.
Of Time and I hated it, like, because it was first gen 3D stuff and it looks so horrible.
Yeah,
I
you played it 10 years late though.
I wanted to kill myself.
You
right, it looks bad now.
You want to hear the 2 Zeldas I've played to completion and get further pissed at me?
Zelda
you
try 2
to guess?
Zelda 2
no
Majora's Mask
no Twilight Princess.
That's okay. That was a good
on the
one.
Wii.
Some people
that was a good
it.
One.
And the first DS one, which was
Phantom Hourglass.
Phantom Hourglass.
Those are both good. Those
are they?
Both really. Oh no, those are
okay.
Really good
I thought
ones.
Those were both like denigrated and.
No,
like,
no, those are good.
Okay.
I don't know about Twilight Princess.
Everyone has
but...
their favorite unfavorite Zelda.
Uh huh.
Okay. Most people hate Zelda too. I think that's the universally maligned. Except I love that game.
Was
it
that
was super
side
hard.
Scroller?
It was a side scroller with the overhead map. Yeah, it was super hard, but it was also good.
God, the world map in Super Mario World
I can't
is
stop
so
thinking
great.
About the Star
it's so
Road
much fun.
Or whatever.
Yeah,
the
yeah,
fuck
yeah.
Star
Road.
Called.
Just mapping out and like completion. It had a great completion.
It had such a great feel to the world map because it you start on that one little. Option you can go left or right
and the sound
and that by itself
you got an option.
Is amazing. Like you start there and it's like, oh, I can go left or right. I wonder what happens if I do both. It's like it's so much fun, and then it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger.
I still feel like it's Christmas morning, like thinking of that game,
the box,
the first time I played
Super
it
box.
I don't even think I got it for Christmas or anything. I think it just feels like Christmas morning.
It was always there
the first time playing that Super Mario World going, oh my God, this is next gen Mario.
Yeah.
You can go left. I can jump on Yoshi's back and like
and
eat
ride
things.
Him.
And he eats things and turns them into coins and then like jump.
He can
off.
Shoot fireballs out of his mouth,
can,
these
like,
big, like beautifully rendered.
You do that extra high spin
that
jump.
That had eyes.
Because
the fireballs had eyes.
The controller has more buttons because so you can do
this
high spin
buttons.
Jump.
The spin jump, man. Right? So you could break blocks and stuff.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
And then when you find the star road,
yeah,
and you could do all those crazy hard star levels or whatever.
The first time I found a key exit, a secret key exit, I was like, hey, what's this key?
And the
oh,
big zoom out?
Keyhole. Oh, shit! I put the key in the keyhole and something happened.
The big
it gets really huge and engulfs you.
Yeah, the keyhole zoom out, zoom in thing is just brilliant.
Mode 7, baby!
Oh, man.
Scaling sprites! That game is great.
Okay, so the real question is like...
Good game.
What don't you like about it? Can you think of anything that you really don't like about that game?
Nah, because when I think of Mario 3, I think of the annoying tank levels at the end.
Oh, those are hard.
And how painful they are. And I can I think of like speed runs of watching someone do those just so much better.
When you can't even speed run those levels because it's like fixed scrolling.
Yeah, but they're just doing it perfectly, like jumping off everybody's head without getting hit once.
Well, and what's also weird...
But I can't think of a bad level in Mario World...
Is that Mario World was difficult at times, but since then, since the internet, like so many freaking mods of Mario games and super crazy hard mods of those games. I've watched videos of people playing it. I can't even think of like the original levels in the same way anymore because they've totally screwed with my mind on what can be done in that game.
The sinister levels at the end of Warrior World were the ones with the giant stomping things and the spinning fire.
Oh God! I just remembered another thing you can do in that game, which is the fences,
and
you can swivel yourself back and forth on the fences.
You can do a sprint slide on your knees to get under like small crevices. Yeah. Oh, that was awesome. Or to just barely survive one of those stompy things, and then it had all those doors that would go. The doors that would
no,
take
not the
you...
flumps, not the blocky ones, but the huge. They'll like take up almost
it
all
looks
of the
like
screen.
A tree trunk.
Oh, yeah, it looks like a huge tree trunk foot thing.
But the flump, and it had all those
great name.
Doors that would go back to previous like alternate versions of the castle room you were
That's
in.
True. That was a hard.
And the ghost houses, you couldn't look, or you had to. If you looked at them, they got scared, but if you looked away, they would like chase
you. I'm telling you, like I don't know why you own the Wii. You're not playing New Mario. New Mario is a lot like Mario World, except basically improved in every possible way. So you should legitimately play those games. And now there's two of them.
Yeah.
They're outstanding. I played a shit ton of those with Justin Martin.
I think that the power of the nostalgia of playing it is more powerful than my desire to play the new games.
That's just what you think. As soon as you picked one up, you'd love it.
Yeah. Maybe, but I just don't... That's the thing. I don't really have the desire to play that kind of game. I just know it's fun, and I had fun, and I'm good with that memory, and I don't really care.
It is just the old thing, just done better. It's not something new, like maybe Way of the Ninja.
Mark of the Ninja is different. Yeah. That's, I mean,
It's just
it's like a
brand
new concept.
It's a very different concept,
Now all we like are willing to play is brand new concepts. It's like, if this has been done before, like at least... Almost
Isn't
as
that
well.
Just this in a different way?
Yeah.
Although, I'm still super psyched for, speaking of Kickstarter, Project Eternity, which is supposed to be like an old school, like Black Isle kind of RPG.
Yeah, I don't know why you're excited for that shit.
Because I played all those games and I really like them, and it's on the iPad, and...
iPad.
I really... I have to admit that I love being able to play shit on my iPad. Like the thing that keeps me from not just sitting down and playing Baldur's Gate again is that I have to sit down, you know, at my TV with my keyboard and mouse and play it, and I can't just sit on the couch and tap something. Like, I really just want to do that now. Like, that's what I've become. I'm still playing The Sims Free Play. I mean, that's who I am now, Josh. Deal with it. Accept it.
Speaking of people complaining about things that are done before, on Dark Souls forums and shit, when people talk about some of the move sets of some of the weapons, because basically every weapon in that game has a unique move set, where R1 does a swing in a very specific way, R2 does a swing in a very specific way, and then dashing R1 does a unique swing, and then what's the other one? Forward and R2 at the same time, like does a leap forward attack in a specific way. Every weapon is like unique. Like there's several different kinds of axe move sets, and it's hilarious to see people on the forums like complaining about some of the move sets of some of these weapons being complete shit. like there was ever any other game that did like weapons with move sets anything like this game.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, how could they put out a game with these move sets that are complete shit? Oh my God.
Will the internet ever not be full of complaining?
And entitled people.
Will that ever occur?
Everything that's new Spoiler is alert, instantly no. old and has problems.
And
with
why
it.
Isn't it better?
Yep.
All right. Well,
speaking of that, why isn't this show better?
Yeah. Well, no, it's great. What are you talking about? We're way better than the other podcasts that don't start with the escort and end in the mission.
Why isn't
mission.
Every other podcast as good as this show?
That's the real question. Yeah. Other podcasts. Work on that.
Suck it.
So that's our show. Thank you for joining us. Thank you, Josh. Thank you, Chaz, for your input.
Thank you, welcome, Mike.
And go to our website, theescortmission.com. Send us mail@theescortmission.com so we can do the mailbag theme that we know you want to hear, but we're not going to do it for you because you didn't send us mail, so suck it. Also, go to our Amazon link, buy stuff through it. It doesn't cost you anything extra, and we get a little extra on the side so that we can buy stuff eventually that will make this better somehow. I'm not sure how, because it's so great already. And we're out. See ya.
Thanks. Thanks.
Late.